Chapter 8. April 1770. Right bracket, Thursday, 19th. In the P.M. at fresh gales at south-southwest and cloudy squally weather, with a large southerly sea, at 6 took in the topsails, and at 1 a.m. brought to and sounded, but had no ground with 130 fathoms of line. At 5, set the topsails close reefed, and 6, saw land the southeast coast of Australia. Sea chart. Extending from northeast to west, distance 5 or 6 leagues, having 80 fathoms, fine sandy bottom. We continued standing to the westward with the wind at south-southwest until 8, at which time we got topgallant yards across, made all sail, and bore away longshore northeast for the easternmost land we had in sight, being at this time in the latitude of 37 degrees 58 minutes south, and longitude of 210 degrees 39 minutes west. The southernmost point of land we had in sight, which bore from us west 1/4 south, I judged to lay in the latitude of 38 degrees 0 minutes south, and in the longitude of 211 degrees 7 minutes west from the meridian of Greenwich. I have named it Point Hicks, because Lieutenant Hicks was the first who discovered this land. To the southward of this point we could see no land, and yet it was clear in that quarter, and by our longitude compared with that of Tasman's, the body of Van Diemen's Land ought to have bore due south from us, and from the soon falling of the sea after the wind abated I had reason to think it did. But as we did not see it, and finding the coast, to trend northeast and southwest, or rather more to the westward, makes me doubtful whether they are one land or no. Had not the gale on the day before forced Cook to run to the northward, he would have made the north end of the Furneaux group, and probably have discovered Bass Strait, which would have cleared up the doubt, which he evidently felt, as to whether Tasmania was an island or not. The fact was not positively known until Dr. Bass sailed through the strait in a whaleboat in 1797. Point Hicks was merely a rise in the coastline, where it dipped below the horizon to the westward, and the name of Point Hicks Hill is now borne by an elevation that seems to agree with the position.
However, everyone who compares this journal with that of Tasman's will be as good a judge as I am. But it is necessary to observe that I do not take the situation of Van Diemen's from the printed charts, but from the extract of Tasman's journal, published by Dirk Rembrandt. At noon we were in the latitude of 37 degrees 50 minutes and longitude of 210 degrees 29 minutes west. The extremes of the land extending from northwest to east-northeast, a remarkable point, bore north 20 degrees east, distant 4 leagues. This point rises to a round hillock very much like the Ramhead going into Plymouth Sound, on which account I called it by the same name. Latitude 37 degrees 39 minutes, longitude 210 degrees 22 minutes west. The variation by an azimuth taken this morning was 8 degrees 7 minutes east. What we have as yet seen of this land appears rather low, and not very hilly, the face of the country green and woody, but the seashore is all a white sand. Friday, 20th. In the P.M. and most part of the night, had a fresh gale westerly, with squalls, attended with showers of rain. In the A.M. at the wind at southwest, with severe weather. At 1 p.m. saw 3 water spouts at once. 2 were between us and the shore, and 1 at some distance upon our larboard quarter. At 6, shortened sail, and brought to for the night, having 56 fathoms fine sandy bottom. The northernmost land in sight bore north by east 1/2 east, and a small island, Gabo Island, lying close to a point on the main bore west, distant 2 leagues. This point I have named Cape Howe,
Cape Howe, called after Admiral Earl Howe, is the southeast point of Australia. The position is almost exact.
Semicolon it may be known by the trending of the coast, which is north on the one side and southwest on the other. Latitude 37 degrees 28 minutes south. Longitude 210 degrees 3 minutes west. It may likewise be known by some round hills upon the main just within it. having brought two with her head offshore, we attend war, and lay her head in until 4 a.m., at which time we made sail alongshore to the northward. At 6, the northernmost land in sight bore north, being at this time about 4 leagues from the land. At noon we were in the latitude of 36 degrees 51 minutes south and longitude of 209 degrees 53 minutes west, and 3 leagues from the land. Course sailed along shore since yesterday at noon, was first north 52 degrees east, 30 miles, then north by east and north by west, 41 miles. The weather being clear gave us an opportunity to view the country, which had a very agreeable and promising aspect, diversified with hills, ridges, plains, and valleys, with some few small lawns. But for the most part the whole was covered with wood. The hills and ridges rise with a gentle slope. They are not high, neither are there many of them. Off Cape Dromedary, New South Wales. Saturday, 21st. Wind southerly, a gentle breeze, and clear weather, with which we coasted along shore to the northward. In the P.M. we saw the smoke of fire in several places, a certain sign that the country is inhabited. At 6, being about 2 or 3 leagues from the land, we shortened sail, and sounded and found 44 fathoms, a sandy bottom. Stood on under an easy sail until 12 o'clock, at which time we brought to until 4 a.m., when we made sail, having then 90 fathoms, 5 leagues from the land. At 6, we were abreast of a pretty high mountain laying near the shore, which, on account of its figure, I named Mount Dromedary, latitude 36 degrees 18 minutes south. Longitude 209 degrees 55 minutes west. The shore under the foot of the mountain forms a point, which I have named Cape Dromedary, over which is a peaked hillock. At this time found the variation to be 10 degrees 42 minutes east. Between 10 and 11 o'clock Mr. Green and I took several observations of the sun and moon, the mean result of which gave 209 degrees 17 minutes west longitude from the meridian of Greenwich. By observation made yesterday we were in the longitude 210 degrees 9 minutes. West 20 minutes gives 209 degrees 49 minutes the longitude of the ship today at noon per yesterday's observation, the mean of which, and today's, give 209 degrees 33 minutes west, by which I fix the longitude of this coast. Our latitude at noon was 35 degrees 49 minutes south. Cape Dromedary bore south 30 degrees west, distant 12 leagues. An open bay, Bateman Bay, wherein lay 3 or 4 small islands, bore northwest by west, distant 5 or 6 leagues. This bay seemed to be but very little sheltered from the sea winds, and yet it is the only likely anchoring place I have yet seen upon the coast. Sunday, 22nd. In the P.M. had a gentle breeze at south by west with which we steered along shore north by east and north-northeast at the distance of about 3 leagues. Saw the smoke of fire in several places near the sea beach. At 5, we were abreast of a point of land which, on account of its perpendicular cliffs, I call it Point Upright, latitude 35 degrees 35 minutes south. It bore from us due west, distant 2 leagues, and in this situation at 31 fathoms, sandy bottom. At 6, falling little wind, we hauled off east-northeast. At this time the northernmost land in sight bore north by east 1 to east, and at midnight, being in 70 fathoms, we brought to until 4 a.m., at which time we made sail in for the land, and at daylight, found ourselves nearly in the same place we were at 5 o'clock in the evening, by which it was apparent that we had been drove about 3 leagues to the southward by a tide or current in the night. After this we steered along shore north-northeast, having a gentle breeze at southwest, and were so near the shore as to distinguish several people upon the sea beach. They appeared to be of a very darker black color, but whether this was the real color of their skins, or the clothes they might have on I know not. At noon we were by observation in the latitude of 35 degrees 27 minutes and longitude 209 degrees 23 minutes. K. Cape Dromedary bore south 28 degrees west, distance 15 leagues. A remarkable peaked hill laying inland, the top of which looked like a pigeon house, and occasioned my giving it that name, bore north 32 degrees 33 minutes west, and a small low island, laying close under the shore, bore northwest, distance 2 or 3 leagues, variation of the compass 9 degrees 50 minutes east. When we first discovered this island in the morning, I was in hopes, from its appearance, that we should have found shelter for the ship behind it. But when we came to approach it near, I did not think that there was even security for a boat to land. But this, I believe, I should have attempted had not the wind come on shore, after which I did not think it safe to send a boat from the ship, as we had a large hollow sea from the southeast rolling in upon the land, which beat everywhere very high upon the shore, and this we have had ever since we came upon the coast. The land near the sea coast still continues of a moderate height, forming alternately rocky points and sandy beaches, but inland, between Mount Dromedary and the Pigeon House, are several pretty high mountains, two only of which we saw, but what were covered with trees, and these lay inland behind the Pigeon House, and are remarkably flat atop, with steep rocky cliffs all round them. As far as we could see, the trees in this country hath all the appearance of being stout and lofty. For these 2 days past, the observed latitude hath been 12 or 14 miles to the southward of the ship's account given by the log, which can be owing to nothing but a current set to the southward. Monday, 23rd. In the P.M. had a gentle breeze at east, which in the night veered to northeast and north. At 1-2 past 4 p.m., being about 5 miles from the land, we tacked and stood off southeast and east until 4 a.m., at which time we tacked and stood in, being then about 9 or 10 leagues from the land. At 8, it fell little wind, and soon after calm. At noon we were by observation in the latitude of 35 degrees 38 minutes, and about 6 leagues from the land, Mount Dromedary bearing south 37 degrees west, distant 17 leagues, and the Pigeon House north 40 degrees west, in this situation at 74 fathoms. Tuesday, 24th. In the P.M. at variable light airs and calms until 6 o'clock, at which time a breeze sprung up at north by west. At this time we had 70 fathoms water, being about 4 or 5 leagues from the land, the Pigeon House bearing north 40 degrees west, Mount Dromedary south 30 degrees west, and the northernmost land in sight north 19 degrees east. Stood to the northeast until noon, having a gentle breeze at northwest, at which time we tacked and stood to the westward, being then, by observation, in the latitude of 35 degrees 10 minutes south and longitude 208 degrees 51 minutes west. A point of land which I named Cape St. George, we having discovered it on that saint's day, bore west, distant 19 miles, and the Pigeon House south 7 degrees west, the latitude and longitude of which I found to be 35 degrees 19 minutes south, and 209 degrees 42 minutes west. In the morning we found the variation to be, by the amplitude, 7 degrees 50 minutes east, by several azimuths 7 degrees 54 minutes east. Off Jervis Bay, New South Wales. Wednesday, 25th. In the P.M. had a fresh breeze at northwest until 3 o'clock, at which time it came to west, and we tacked and stood to the northward. At 5 o'clock, being about 5 or 6 leagues from the land, the Pigeon House bearing west-southwest, distant 9 leagues, sounded and had 86 fathoms. At 8, being very squally, with lightning, we close reefed the topsails and brought to, being then in 120 fathoms. At 3 a.m. made sail again to the northward, having the advantage of a fresh gale at southwest. At noon we were about 3 or 4 leagues from the land, and in the latitude of 34 degrees 22 minutes and longitude 208 degrees 36 minutes west. Course and distance sailed since yesterday noon is north by east 49 miles. In the course of this day's run, we saw the smoke of fire in several places near the sea beach. About 2 leagues to the northward of Cape St. George, the shore seems to form a bay, Jervis Bay, a very fine port, but little use has been made of it up to the present time, which appeared to be sheltered from the northeast winds. But as we had the wind, it was not in my power to look into it, and the appearance was not favorable enough to induce me to lose time in beating up to it. The north point of this bay, on account of its figure, I named Long Nose. Latitude 45 degrees 4 minutes south, 8 leagues to the northward of this, is a point which I call a dread point. Some part of the land about it appeared of that color.
Latitude 34 degrees 29 minutes south, longitude 208 degrees 49 minutes west.
A little way inland to the northwest of this point is a round hill, the top of which looked like the crown of a hat. Thursday, 26th. Clear, serene weather. In the P.M. had a light breeze at north-northwest until 5, at which time it fell calm, we being then about 3 or 4 leagues from the land and in 48 fathoms. Variation by azimuth 8 degrees 48 minutes east, the extremes of the land from northeast by north to southwest by south. Saw several smokes along shore before dark, and 2 or 3 times a fire. In the night we lay becalmed, driving in before the sea, until 1 o'clock a.m., at which time we got a breeze from the land, with which we steered northeast, being then in 38 fathoms water. At noon it fell little wind, and veered to northeast by north, we being then in the latitude of 34 degrees 10 minutes and longitude 208 degrees 27 minutes west, and about 5 leagues from the land, which extended from south 37 degrees west to north 1 to east. In this latitude are some white cliffs, which rise perpendicular from the sea to a moderate height. Friday, 27th. Variable light airs between the northeast and northwest, clear pleasant weather. In the P.M. stood offshore until 2, then tacked and stood until 6, at which time we tacked and stood off, being then in 54 fathoms, and about 4 or 5 miles from the land, the extremes of which bore from south, 28 degrees west to north 25 degrees 30 minutes east. At 12 we tacked and stood in until 4 a.m., then made a trip off until daylight, after which we stood in for the land. In all this time we lost ground, owing a good deal to the variableness of the winds. For at noon we were by observation in the latitude of 34 degrees 21 minutes south, red point bearing south 27 degrees west, distant 3 leagues. In this situation we were about 4 or 5 miles from the land, which extended from south 19 degrees 30 minutes west to north 29 degrees east. Saturday, 28th. In the P.M. hoisted out the pinnace and yawl in order to attempt a landing, but the pinnace took in the water so fast that she was obliged to be hoisted in again to stop her leaks. At this time we saw several people ashore, 4 of whom were carrying a small boat or canoe, which we imagined they were going to put into the water in order to come off to us, but in this we were mistaken. Being now not above 2 miles from the shore, Mr. Banks, Dr. Solander, Tupia, and myself put off in the yawl, and pulled in for the land to a place, where we saw 4 or 5 of the natives, who took to the woods as we approached the shore, which disappointed us in the expectation we had of getting a near view of them, if not to speak to them. But our disappointment was heightened when we found that we nowhere could effect a landing by reason of the great surf which beat everywhere upon the shore. We saw hauled up upon the beach 3 or 4 small canoes, which to us appeared not much unlike the small ones of New Zealand. In the wood were several trees of the palm kind, and no underwood. And this was all we were able to observe from the boat, after which we returned to the ship about 5 in the evening.
The place where Cook attempted to land is near Bully, a place where there is now considerable export of coal. A large coal port, Wollongong, lies a little to the southward.
At this time it fell calm, and we were not above 1.5 miles from the shore, in 11 fathoms, and within some breakers, that lay to the southward of us. but luckily a light breeze came off from the land, which carried us out of danger, and with which we stood to the northward. At daylight in the morning we discovered a bay,
Botany Bay,
which appeared to be tolerably well sheltered from all winds, into which I resolved to go with the ship, and with this view, sent the master in the pinnace to sound the entrance, while we keep turning up with the ship, having the wind right out. At noon the entrance bore north-northwest, distance 1 mile. At anchor, Botany Bay, New South Wales. Sunday, 29th. In the P.M. wind southerly and clear weather, with which we stood into the bay, and anchored under the south shore about 2 miles within the entrance in 5 fathoms, the south point bearing southeast and the north point east. Saw, as we came in, on both points of the bay, several of the natives and a few huts, men, women, and children on the south shore abreast of the ship, to which place I went in the boats in hopes of speaking with them, accompanied by Mr. Banks, Dr. Solander, and Tupia. As we approached the shore they all made off, except 2 men, who seemed resolved to oppose our landing. As soon as I saw this, I ordered the boats to lay upon their oars, in order to speak to them, but this was to little purpose, for neither us nor Tupia could understand one word they said. We then threw them some nails, beads, etc., ashore, which they took up, and seemed not ill pleased with, insomuch, that I thought, that they beckoned to us to come ashore, but in this we were mistaken, for as soon as we put the boat in they again came to oppose us, upon which I fired a musket between the two, which had no other effect than to make them retire back, where bundles of their darts lay, and one of them took up a stone, and threw at us, which caused my firing a second musket, loaded with small shot, and although some of the shot struck the man, yet it had no other effect than making him lay hold on a target. Immediately after this we landed, which we had no sooner done than they throwed 2 darts at us. This obliged me to fire a 3rd shot, soon after which they both made off, but not in such haste, but what we might have taken one. But Mr. Banks being of opinion that the darts were poisoned, made me cautious how I advanced into the woods. We found here a few small huts made of the bark of trees, in one of which were 4 or 5 small children, with whom we left some strings of beads, etc. A quantity of darts lay about the huts. These we took away with us. 3 canoes lay upon the beach, the worst I think I ever saw. They were about 12 or 14 feet long, made of 1 piece of the bark of a tree, drawn or tied up at each end, and the middle kept open by means of pieces of stick by way of thwarts. After searching for fresh water without success, except a little in a small hole dug in the sand, we embarked, and went over to the north point of the bay, wherein coming in we saw several people, but when we landed now there were nobody to be seen. We found here some fresh water, which came trickling down and stood in pools among the rocks. But as this was troublesome to come at, I sent a party of men ashore in the morning to the place where we first landed to dig holes in the sand, by which means and a small stream they found fresh water sufficient to water the ship. The string of beads, etc., we had left with the children last night were found laying in the huts this morning. Probably the natives were afraid to take them away. After breakfast we sent some empty casks ashore, and a party of men to cut wood, and I went myself in the pinnace to sound, and explore the bay, in the doing of which I saw some of the natives, but they all fled at my approach. I landed in 2 places, one of which the people had but just left, as there were small fires and fresh mussels broiling upon them. Here likewise lay vast heaps of the largest oyster shells I ever saw. Monday, 30th. As soon as the wooders and waterers were come on board to dinner, 10 or 12 of the natives came to the watering place, and took away their canoes that lay there, but did not offer to touch any one of our casks that had been left ashore, and in the afternoon 16 or 18 of them came boldly up to within 100 yards of our people at the watering place, and there made a stand. Mr. Hicks, who was the officer ashore, did all in his power to entice them to him by offering them presents. but it was to no purpose. All they seemed to want was for us to be gone. After staying a short time, they went away. They were all armed with darts and wooden swords. The darts have each four prongs, and pointed with fish bones. Those we have seen seem to be intended more for striking fish than offensive weapons. Neither are they poisoned, as we at first thought. After I had returned from sounding the bay, I went over to a cove on the north side of the bay, where, in three or four hauls with the Shan, we caught about 300 pounds weight of fish, which I caused to be equally divided among the ship's company. And I went in the pinnace to sound, and explore the north side of the bay, where I neither met with inhabitants or anything remarkable. Mr. Green took the sun's meridian altitude a little within the south entrance of the bay, which gave the latitude 34 degrees 0 minutes south. May 1770. ... Tuesday, May 1st. Gentle breezes, northerly. In the P.M. 10 of the natives again visited the watering place. I, being on board at this time, went immediately ashore, but before I got there they were going away. I followed them alone, and unarmed some distance along shore, but they would not stop until they got farther off than I choose to trust myself. These were armed in the same manner as those that came yesterday. In the evening I sent some hands to haul the seine, but they caught but a very few fish. A little after sunrise I found the variation, to be 11 degrees 3 minutes east. Last night 4 B. Sutherland, seaman, departed this life, and in the A.M. his body was buried ashore at the watering place, which occasioned my calling the south point of this bay after his name. This morning a party of us went ashore to some huts, not far from the watering place, where some of the natives are daily seen. Here we left several articles, such as cloth, looking glasses, combs, beads, nails, etc. After this, we made an excursion into the country, which we found diversified with woods, lawns, and marshes. The woods are free from underwood of every kind, and the trees are at such a distance from one another, that the whole country, or at least great part of it, might be cultivated without being obliged to cut down a single tree. We found the soil everywhere, except in the marshes, to be a light white sand, and produceth a quantity of good grass, which grows in little tufts about as big as one can hold in one's hand, and pretty close to one another. In this manner the surface of the ground is coated. In the woods between the trees Dr. Solander had a bare sight of a small animal something like a rabbit, and we found the dung of an animal. This was the kangaroo, which must feed upon grass, and which, we judge, could not be less than a deer. We also saw the track of a dog, or some such like animal. We met with some huts and places, where the natives had been, and at our first setting out one of them was seen. The others, I suppose, had fled upon our approach. I saw some trees, that had been cut down by the natives with some sort of a blunt instrument, and several trees that were barked, the bark of which had been cut by the same instrument. In many of the trees, especially the palms, were cut steps of about 3 or 4 feet asunder for the conveniency of climbing them. We found two sorts of gum, one sort of which is like gum dragon, and is the same, I suppose, Tasman took for gum lac. It is extracted from the largest tree in the woods. Wednesday, 2nd. Between 3 and 4 in the P.M. we returned out of the country, and after dinner went ashore to the watering place, where we had not been long before 17 or 18 of the natives appeared in sight. In the morning I had sent Mr. Gore, with a boat, up to the head of the bay to dredge for oysters. In his return to the ship he, and another person came by land, and met with these people, who followed him at the distance of 10 or 20 yards. Whenever Mr. Gore made a stand, and faced them they stood also, and notwithstanding they were all armed, they never offered to attack him. But after he had parted from them, and they were met by Dr. Monkhouse and one or two more, who, upon making a sham retreat, they throwed 3 darts after them, after which they began to retire. Dr. Solander, I, and Tupia made all the haste we could after them, but could not, either by words or actions, prevail upon them to come near us. Mr. Gore saw some up the bay, who by signs invited them ashore, which he prudently declined. And yea, M. at the wind in the southeast with rain, which prevented me from making an excursion up the head of the bay as I intended. Thursday, 3rd. Winds at southeast, a gentle breeze and fair weather. And the P. M.M. I made a little excursion along the sea coast to the southward, accompanied by Mr. Banks and Dr. Solander. At our first entering the woods we saw three of the natives, who made off, as soon as they saw us. More of them were seen by others of our people, who likewise made off, as soon as they found they were discovered. And yea, M. I went in the pinnace to the head of the bay, accompanied by Dr. Solander and Monkhouse, in order to examine the country, and to try to form some connections with the natives. In our way thither we met with 10 or 12 of them fishing, each in a small canoe, who entered into shoal water upon our approach. Others again we saw at the first place we landed at, who took to their canoes, and fled before we came near them. After this we took water, and went almost to the head of the inlet, where we landed and traveled some distance inland. We found the face of the country much the same as I have before described, but the land much richer, for instead of sand I found in many places a deep black soil, which we thought was capable of producing any kind of grain. At present it produceth, besides timber, as fine meadow as ever was seen. However, we found it not all like this. Some few places were very rocky, but this, I believe, to be uncommon. The stone is sandy, and very proper for building, etc. After we had sufficiently examined this part we returned to the boat, and seeing some smoke and canoes at another part we went thither, in hopes of meeting with the people, but they made off as we approached. There were 6 canoes and 6 small fires near the shore, and mussels roasting upon them, and a few oysters laying near. From this we conjectured that there had been just 6 people, who had been out each in his canoe picking up the shellfish, and come ashore to eat them, where each had made his fire to dress them by. We tasted of their cheer, and left them in return strings of beads, etc. The day being now far spent, we set out on our return to the ship. Friday, 4th. Winds northerly, serene weather. Upon my return to the ship in the evening I found that none of the natives had appeared near the watering place, but about 20 of them had been fishing in their canoes at no great distance from us. And yea, M., as the wind would not permit us to sail, I sent out some parties into the country to try to form some connections with the natives. One of the midshipmen met with a very old man and woman and 2 small children. They were close to the water side, where several more were in their canoes gathering of shellfish, and he, being alone, was afraid to make any stay with the 2 old people lest he should be discovered by those in the canoes. He gave them a bird he had shot, which they would not touch. Neither did they speak one word, but seemed to be much frightened. They were quite naked. Even the woman had nothing to cover her nudities. Dr. Monkhouse and another man being in the woods, not far from the watering place, discovered 6 more of the natives, who at first seemed to wait his coming, but as he was going up to them, he had a dart thrown at him out of a tree, which narrowly escaped him. As soon as the fellow had thrown the dart he descended the tree and made off, and with him all the rest, and these were all that were met with in the course of this day. Saturday, 5th. In the P. M. I went with a party of men over to the north shore, and while some hands were hauling the shawn, a party of us made an excursion of 3 or 4 miles into the country, or rather along the sea coast. We met with nothing remarkable. Great part of the country for some distance inland from the sea coast is mostly a barren heath, diversified with marshes and morasses. Upon our return to the boat we found they had caught a great number of small fish, which the sailors call leather jackets on account of their having a very thick skin. They are known in the West Indies. I had sent the yawl in the morning to fish for stingrays, who returned in the evening with upwards of 400 weight, one single one weighed 240 pounds exclusive of the entrails. And A.M., as the wind continued northerly, I sent the yawl again a-fishing, and I went with a party of men into the country, but met with nothing extraordinary. Description of Botany Bay, New South Wales. Sunday, 6th. In the evening the yawl returned from fishing, having caught two stingrays weighing near 600 pounds. The great quantity of plants Mr. Banks and Dr. Solander found in this place occasioned my giving it the name of Botany Bay.
The bay was at first called Stingray Bay. The plan of it at the Admiralty is called by this name, and none of the logs know Botany Bay. It seems probable that Cook finally settled on the name after the ship left, and when Banks had had time to examine his collections. A monument was erected in 1870 near the spot, on the southern side, where Cook first landed. Botany Bay was intended to be the site where the first settlement of convicts should be made, but on the arrival of Captain Philip, on January 18, 1788, he found it so unsuited for the number of his colony that he started in a boat to examine Broken Bay. On his way he went into Port Jackson, and immediately decided on settling there. On the 25th and 26th the ships went round, and Sydney was founded.
It is situated in the latitude of 34 degrees 0 minutes south, longitude 208 degrees 37 minutes west. It is capacious, safe, and commodious. It may be known by the land on the sea coast, which is of a pretty even and moderate height, rather higher than it is inland, with steep rocky cliffs next the sea, and looks like a long island lying close under the shore. The entrance of the bay lies about the middle of this land. And coming from the southward it is discovered before you are abreast of it, which you cannot do in coming from the northward. The entrance is little more than a quarter of a mile broad, and lies in west-northwest. To sail into it keep the south shore on board until within a small bare island, which lies close under the north shore. Being within that island the deepest of water is on that side, 7, 6 and 5 fathoms a good way up. There is shoal water a good way off from the south shore, from the inner south point quite to the head of the harbor. But over towards the north and northwest shore is a channel of 12 or 14 feet at low water, 3 or 4 leagues up, to a place where there is 3 or 4 fathoms, but there I found very little fresh water. We anchored near the south shore about a mile within the entrance for the conveniency of sailing with a southerly wind, and the getting of fresh water, but I afterwards found a very fine stream of fresh water on the north shore in the first sandy cove within the island, before which the ship might lay almost landlocked, and wood for fuel may be got everywhere. Although wood is here in great plenty, yet there is very little variety. The bigest trees are as larger than our oaks in England, and grows a good deal like them, and yields a reddish gum. The wood itself is heavy, hard, and black like lignum vitae. Another sort that grows tall, and straight something like pines, the wood of this is hard and ponderous, and something of the nature of America live oak. These two are all the timber trees I met with. There are a few sorts of shrubs, and several palm trees and mangroves about the head of the harbor. The country is woody, low, and flat as far in as we could see, and I believe that the soil is in general sandy. In the wood are a variety of very beautiful birds, such as cockatoos, lorikeets, parrots, etc., and crows exactly like those we have in England. Waterfowl is no less plenty about the head of the harbor, where there is large flats of sand and mud, on which they seek their food. The most of these were unknown to us, one sort especially, which was black and white, and as large as a goose, but most like a pelican.
Most probably the black and white or semi-palmated goose, now exterminated in these parts.
On the sand and mud banks are oysters, mussels, cockles, etc., which I believe are the chief support of the inhabitants. who go into shoal water with their little canoes, and pick them out of the sand and mud with their hands, and sometimes roast, and eat them in the canoe, having often a fire for that purpose, as I suppose, for I know no other it can be for. The natives do not appear to be numerous, neither do they seem to live in large bodies, but disperse it in small parties along by the waterside. Those I saw were about as tall as Europeans, of a very dark brown color, but not black, nor had they woolly, frizzled hair, but black and lank like ours. No sort of clothing or ornaments were ever seen by any of us upon any one of them, or in or about any of their huts, from which I conclude that they never wear any. Some that we saw had their faces and bodies painted with a sort of white paint or pigment. Although I have said that shellfish is their chief support, yet they catch other sorts of fish, some of which we found roasting on the fire the first time we landed. Some of these they strike with gigs, a fishing implement like a trident, and others they catch with hook and line. We have seen them strike fish with gigs, and hooks and lines are found in their huts. Stingrays, I believe, they do not eat, because I never saw the least remains of one near any of their huts or fireplaces. However, we could know but very little of their customs, as we never were able to form any connections with them. They had not so much as touched the things we had left in their huts on purpose for them to take away. During our stay in this harbor I caused the English colors to be displayed ashore every day, and an inscription to be cut out upon one of the trees near the watering place, setting forth the ship's name, date, etc. off Port Jackson, New South Wales. Right bracket having seen everything this place afforded, we, at daylight in the morning, weighed with a light breeze at northwest, and put to sea, and the wind soon after coming to the southward we steered along shore north-northeast, and at noon we were by observation in the latitude of 33 degrees 50 minutes south, about 2 or 3 miles from the land, and abreast of a bay, wherein there appeared to be safe anchorage, which I called Port Jackson. Cook, having completed his water at Botany Bay, and having many hundreds of miles of coast before him, did not examine Port Jackson, the magnificent harbor in which Sydney, the capital of New South Wales, now lies. His chart gives the shape of what he could see very accurately, but the main arm of the harbor is hidden from the sea. He named the bay after Mr. afterwards Sir George Jackson, one of the secretaries of the Admiralty. This fact is recorded on a tablet in the Bishop's Stortford Church to the memory of Sir George Duckett, which name Sir George had assumed in later years. This interesting evidence was brought to light by Sir Alfred Stephen, Lieutenant Governor of New South Wales, and puts an end to the legend which was long current, that Port Jackson was named after a sailor who first saw it. There was, moreover, no person of the name of Jackson on board. It lies 3 leagues to the northward of Botany Bay. I had almost forgot to mention that it is high water in this bay at the full and change of the moon about 8 o'clock, and rises and falls upon a perpendicular about 4 or 5 feet. Monday, 7th. Little wind, southerly, and serene pleasant weather. And the P.M.M. found the variation by several azimuths to be 8 degrees east. At sunset the northernmost land in sight bore north 26 degrees east, and some broken land, that appeared to form a bay, bore north 40 degrees west, distant 4 leagues. This bay I named Broken Bay. The Hawkesbury River, the largest on the east coast of Australia, runs into Broken Bay. Latitude 33 degrees 36 minutes south. We steered along shore north-northeast all night at the distance of about 3 leagues from the land, having from 32 to 36 fathoms, hard sandy bottom. A little after sunrise I took several azimuths with 4 needles belonging to the azimuth compass, the mean result of which gave the variation of 7 degrees 56 minutes east. At noon we were by observation in the latitude of 33 degrees 22 minutes south, and about 3 leagues from the land, the northernmost part of which in sight bore north 19 degrees east. some pretty high land which projected out in three bluff points, and occasioned my calling it Cape 3 points,
latitude 33 degrees 33 minutes south,
bore southwest, distant 5 leagues, longitude made from Botany Bay 0 degrees 19 minutes east. Tuesday, 8th. Variable light airs and clear weather. And the P.M. saw some smokes upon the shore, and in the evening found the variation to be 8 degrees 25 minutes east. At this time we were about 2 or 3 miles from the land, and had 28 fathoms water. Our situation at noon was nearly the same as yesterday, having advanced not one step to the northward. Wednesday, 9th. Winds northerly. Most part a fresh breeze, with which we stood offshore until 12 at night. At the distance of 5 leagues from the land at 70 fathoms, at the distance of 6 leagues 80 fathoms, which is the extent of the soundings, for at the distance of 10 leagues off we had no ground with 150 fathoms. Stood inshore until 8 o'clock a.m., and hardly fetched Cape 3 points. Having a little wind at northwest by north, we tacked, and stood off until noon, at which time we tacked with the wind at north-northeast, being then in the latitude of 33 degrees 37 minutes south, Cape 3 points bearing northwest by west, distance 4 leagues. Thursday, 10th, and the P.M. had the wind at northeast by north, with which we stood inshore until near 4 o'clock, when we tacked in 23 fathoms water, being about a mile from the land, and as much to the southward of Cape 3 points. In the night the wind veered to northwest and west, and in the morning to southwest. Having the advantage of a light moon, we made the best of our way longshore to the northward. At noon we were by observation in the latitude of 32 degrees 53 minutes south, and longitude 208 degrees 0 minutes west, and about 2 leagues from the land, which extended from north 41 degrees east to south 41 degrees west. A small round rock or island, Knobby Head, at the entrance of Newcastle Harbor, formed by the Hunter River. Newcastle is the great coal port of New South Wales. It has a population of 20,000, and exports 1,500,000 tons of coal in the year. Laying close under the land, bore south 82 degrees west, distance 3 or 4 leagues. At sunrise in the morning found the variation to be 8 degrees east, in the latitude of 33 degrees 2 minutes south. A little way inland is a remarkable hill that is shaped like the crown of a hat, which we passed about 9 o'clock in the forenoon. Off Cape Hawk, New South Wales. Right bracket, Friday, 11th. Wind southerly in the day, and in the night westerly. A gentle breeze and clear weather. At 4 p.m. passed, at the distance of 1 mile, a low rocky point which I named Point Stevens,
latitude 32 degrees 45 minutes.
On the north side of this point is an inlet which I called Port Stevens,
called after Mr. Stevens, one of the secretaries to the Admiralty. It is a large and fine harbor. Latitude 32 degrees 40 minutes. Longitude 207 degrees 51 minutes.
That appeared to me from the masthead to be sheltered from all winds. At the entrance lay 3 small islands, 2 of which are of a tolerable height, and on the main, near the shore, are some high round hills that make it a distance like islands. In passing this bay at the distance of 2 or 3 miles from the shore, our soundings were from 33 to 27 fathoms, from which I conjectured that there must be a sufficient depth of water for shipping in the bay. We saw several smokes a little way in the country upon the flat land. By this I did suppose that there were lagoons which afforded subsistence for the natives, such as shellfish, etc., for we as yet know nothing else they have to live upon. At 1-2 past 5, the northernmost land in sight bore north 36 degrees east, and Point Stevens southwest, distant 4 leagues, at which time we took in our steerings,
studding sails,
and run under an easy sail all night until 4 a.m., when we made all sail. Our soundings in the night were from 48 to 62 fathoms, at the distance of between 3 and 4 leagues from the land. At 8 we were abreast of a high point of land, which made in two hillocks. This point I call Cape Hawke
after Admiral Sir Edward Hawke, first Lord of the Admiralty. Latitude 32 degrees 14 minutes south, longitude 207 degrees 30 minutes west.
It bore from us at this time west distant 8 miles, and the same time the northernmost land in sight bore north 6 degrees east, and appeared high, and like an island. At noon this land bore north 8 degrees east, the northernmost land in sight north 13 degrees east, and Cape Hawke south 37 degrees west. Latitude in per observation 32 degrees 2 minutes south, which was 12 miles to the southward of that given by the log, which I do suppose to be owing to a current setting that way. Course and distance sailed since yesterday at noon, was first northeast by east, 27 miles, then north 10 degrees east, 37 miles, longitude in 207 degrees 20 minutes west. Variation per morning amplitude and azimuth 9 degrees 10 minutes east. Saturday, 12th. Wind southerly, a gentle breeze in the P.M. As we run along shore we saw several smokes a little way inland from the sea, and one upon the top of a hill, which was the first we have seen upon elevated ground, since we have been upon the coast. At sunset we were in 23 fathoms, and about a league and a half from the land, the northernmost part of which we had in sight bore north 13 degrees east, and three remarkable large high hills lying contiguous to each other, and not far from the shore, bore north-northwest. As these hills bore some resemblance to each other we called them the Three Brothers. We steered northeast by north all night, having from 27 to 67 fathoms, from 2 to 5 and 6 leagues from the land, and at daylight we steered north for the northernmost land we had in sight. At noon we were 4 leagues from the land, and by observation in the latitude of 31 degrees 18 minutes south, which was 15 miles to the southward of that given by the log. Our course and distance made good since yesterday noon was north 24 degrees east, 48 miles. Longitude 206 degrees 58 minutes west. Several smokes seen a little way inland. Sunday, 13th. In the P.M. stood inshore with the wind at northeast until 6, at which time we tacked, being about 3 or 4 miles from the land, and in 24 fathoms. Stood offshore with a fresh breeze at north and north-northwest until midnight, then tacked, being in 118 fathoms, and 8 leagues from the land. At 3 a.m. the wind veered to the westward, and we tacked and stood to the northward. At noon we were by observation in the latitude of 30 degrees 43 minutes south, and longitude 206 degrees 45 minutes west, and about 3 or 4 leagues from the land, the northernmost part of which bore from us north 13 degrees west, and a pointer headland, on which were fires, that caused a great quantity of smoke, which occasioned my giving it the name of Smoky Cape, bore southwest, distant 4 leagues. It is moderately high land. Over the pitch of the point, is a round hillock, within it two others, much higher and larger, and within them very low land,
latitude 30 degrees 51 minutes, longitude 206 degrees 5 minutes west.
Besides the smoke seen upon this cape we saw more in several places along the coast. The observed latitude was only 5 miles to the southward of the log. Monday, 14th. At the P.M. it fell calm, and continued so about an hour, when a breeze sprung up at northeast, with which we stood inshore until 6 o'clock, when, being in 30 fathoms and 3 or 4 miles from the land, we tacked, having the wind at north-northwest. At this time Smoky Cape bore south 3-4 degrees west, distant about 5 leagues, and the northernmost land in sight north 1-4 degrees east. At 8 we made a trip inshore for an hour. After this the wind came offshore, with which we stood along shore to the northward, having from 30 to 21 fathoms, at the distance of 4 or 5 miles from the land. At 5 a.m. the wind veered to north, and blowed a fresh breeze, attended with squalls and dark cloudy weather. At 8 it began to thunder and rain, which lasted about an hour, and then fell calm, which gave us an opportunity to sound, and found 86 fathoms, being about 4 or 5 leagues from the land. After this we got the wind southerly, a fresh breeze and fair weather, and we steered north by west for the northernmost land we had in sight. At noon we were about 4 leagues from the land, and by observation in the latitude of 30 degrees 22 minutes south, which was 9 miles to the southward of that given by the log. Longitude in 206 degrees 39 minutes west, and course and distance made good since yesterday noon north 16 degrees east, 22 miles. Some tolerable high land near the shore bore west. As I have not mentioned the aspect of the country since we left Botany Bay, I shall now describe it as it hath at different times appeared to us. As we have advanced to the northward, the land hath increased in height, insomuch that in this latitude it may be called a hilly country, but between this and Botany Bay it is diversified with an agreeable variety of hills, ridges, and valleys, and large plains all clothed with wood, which to all appearance is the same as I have before mentioned, as we could discover no visible alteration in the soil. Near the shore the land is in general low and sandy, except the points which are rocky, and over many of them are pretty high hills, which at first rising out of the water, appear like a island. Tuesday, 15th. Fresh gales at southwest, west-southwest, and south-southwest. In the P.M. at some heavy squalls, attended with rain and hail, which obliged us to close reef our topsails. Between 2 and 4 we had some small rocky islands, the solitary islands. Between us and the land, the southernmost lies in the latitude of 30 degrees 10 minutes, the northernmost in 29 degrees 58 minutes, and about 2 leagues or more from the land. We sounded, and at 33 fathoms about 12 miles without this last island. At 8 we brought to until 10, at which time we made sail under our topsails. Having the advantage of the moon, we steered along shore north and north by east, keeping at the distance of about 3 leagues from the land, having from 30 to 25 fathoms. As soon as it was daylight we made all the sail we could, having the advantage of a fresh gale and fair weather. During the night the entrance of the Clarence River, now the outlet for the produce of a large and rich agricultural district, was passed, and in the morning, that of the Richmond River, which serves a similar purpose. At 9, being about a league from the land, we saw upon it people and smoke in several places. At noon we were by observation in the latitude of 28 degrees 39 minutes south, and longitude 206 degrees 27 minutes west, course and distance sailed since yesterday at noon north 6 degrees 45 minutes east, 104 miles. A tolerable high point of land bore northwest by west, distant 3 miles. This point I named Cape Byron.
Captain John Byron was one of Cook's predecessors in exploration in the Pacific, having sailed round the world in H.M.S. Dolphin, in company with the Tamer, in 1764-1766. Latitude 28 degrees 37 minutes 30 seconds south, longitude 206 degrees 30 minutes west.
It may be known by a remarkable sharp peak mountain lying in land northwest by west from it. From this point the land trends north 13 degrees west. Inland it is pretty high and hilly, but near the shore it is low. To the southward of the point the land is low, and tolerable level. Off Point Danger, New South Wales. ... Wednesday, 16th. Wind southerly, a fresh gale, with which we steered north along shore until sunset, at which time we discovered breakers ahead, and on our larboard bow, being at this time in 20 fathoms, and about 5 miles from the land. Hauled off east until 8, at which time we had run 8 miles, and had increased our depth of water to 44 fathoms. We then brought to with her head to the eastward, and lay on this tack until 10 o'clock, when, having increased our soundings to 78 fathoms, we wore and lay with her head inshore until 5 o'clock a.m., when we made sail. At daylight we were surprised, by finding ourselves farther to the southward than we were in the evening, and yet it had blown strong all night southerly. We now saw the breakers again within us, which we passed at the distance of about 1 league. They lay in the latitude of 28 degrees 8 minutes south, and stretch off east 2 leagues from a point under which is a small island. Their situation may always be found by the peak mountain before mentioned, which bears southwest by west from them, and on their account I have named it Mount Warning. It lies 7 or 8 leagues inland in the latitude of 28 degrees 22 minutes south. The land is high and hilly about it, but it is conspicuous enough to be distinguished from everything else. The point off which these shoals lay I have named Point Danger.
Point Danger is the boundary point on the coast between New South Wales and Queensland.
To the northward of it the land, which is low, trends northwest by north, but we soon found that it did not keep that direction long before it turned it again to the northward. At noon we were about 2 leagues from the land, and by observation in the latitude of 27 degrees 46 minutes, which was 17 miles to the southward of the log, longitude 206 degrees 26 minutes west. Mount Warning bore south 20 degrees west, distant 14 leagues. The northernmost land in sight bore north. Our course and distance made good since yesterday north 1 degree 45 minutes west, 53 miles. Off Moreton Bay, Queensland. (Right bracket) Thursday, 17th. Wind southerly, mostly a fresh breeze, with which in the P.M.M. we steered along shore north 3-4 east, at the distance of about 2 leagues off. Between 4 and 5 we discovered breakers on our larboard bow. Our depth of water at this time was 37 fathoms. At sunset the northernmost land in sight bore north by west, the breakers northwest by west, distant 4 miles, and the northernmost land set at noon, which formed a point, I named Point Lookout, bore west, distant 5 or 6 miles,
latitude 27 degrees 6 minutes. There is some mistake in this latitude. It should be 27 degrees 26 minutes.
On the north side of this point the shore forms a wide open bay, which I have named Morton's Bay.
James, Earl of Morton, was president of the Royal Society in 1764, and one of the commissioners of longitude.
In the bottom of which the land is so low, that I could but just see it from the topmast head. The breakers I have just mentioned lies about 3 or 4 miles from Point Lookout. At this time we had a great sea from the southward, which broke prodigious high upon them. Stood on north-northeast until 8, when, being past the breakers, and having deepened our water to 52 fathoms, we brought to until 12 o'clock, then made sail to the north-northeast. At 4 a.m. we sounded, and at 135 fathoms. At daylight I found that we had in the night got much farther to the northward, and from the shore than I expected from the course we steered, for we were at least 6 or 7 leagues off, and therefore hauled in northwest by west, having the advantage of a fresh gale at south-southwest. The northernmost land seen last night bore from us at this time south-southwest, distant 6 leagues. This land I named Cape Morton, it being the north point of the bay of the same name,
latitude 26 degrees 56 minutes south, longitude 206 degrees 28 minutes.
From Cape Morton the land trends away west, further than we could see, for there is a small space where we could see no land. Some on board were of opinion that there is a river there, because the sea looked paler than usual. Upon sounding we found 34 fathoms fine white sandy bottom, which alone is sufficient change, the apparent color of sea water, without the assistance of rivers. The land need only to be low here, as it is in a thousand other places upon the coast, to have made it impossible for us to have seen it at the distance we were off. Be this as it may, it was a point that could not be cleared up as we had the wind. But should anyone be desirous of doing it that may come after me, this place may always be found by 3 hills which lay to the northward of it in the latitude of 26 degrees 53 minutes south. These hills lay but a little way inland, and not far from each other, They are very remarkable on account of their singular form of elevation, which very much resembles glass houses.
The glass houses form a well-known sea mark on entering Moreton Bay, as the name is now written. Brisbane, the capital of Queensland, stands on the river of the same name, which falls into Moreton Bay,
which occasioned my giving them that name. The northernmost of the three is the highest and largest. There are likewise several other peaked hills inland to the northward of these, but they are not near so remarkable. At noon we were by observation in the latitude of 26 degrees 28 minutes south, which was 10 miles to the northward of the log, a circumstance that hath not happened since we have been upon the coast before. Our course and distance run since yesterday noon was north by west 80 miles, which brought us into the longitude of 206 degrees 46 minutes. At this time we were about 2 or 3 leagues from the land, and in 24 fathoms water, a low bluff point, which was the southern point of an open sandy bay, Laguna Bay.
The point is called Low Bluff.
Bore north 52 degrees west, distant 3 leagues, and the northernmost point of land in sight bore north 14 east. Several smokes seen today, and some pretty far inland. Friday, 18th. And steering along shore at the distance of 2 leagues off our soundings, was from 24 to 32 fathoms sandy bottom. At 6 p.m. the north point set at noon, bore north 14 west, distant 4 leagues. At 10 it bore northwest by west 12 west, and as we had seen no land to the northward of it we brought to, not knowing which way to steer, having at this time but little wind, and continued so for the most part of the night. At 2 p.m. we made sail with the wind at southwest, and at daylight saw the land extending as far as north 3-4 east. The point set last night bore southwest by west, distant 3 or 4 leagues. I have named it Double Island Point, on account of its figure,
latitude 25 degrees 58 minutes south, longitude 206 degrees 48 minutes west.
The land within this point is of a moderate and pretty equal height, but the point itself is of such an unequal height, that it looks like two small islands laying under the land. It likewise may be known by the white cliffs on the north side of it. Here the land trends to the northwest, and forms a large open bay,
wide bay,
in the bottom of which the land appeared to be very low, insomuch that we could but just see it from the deck. In crossing the mouth of this bay our depth of water was from 30 to 32 fathoms, a white sandy bottom. At noon we were about 3 leagues from the land, and in the latitude of 25 degrees 34 minutes south, longitude 206 degrees 45 minutes west. Double Island Point bore south 3-4 west, and the northernmost land in sight north 3-4 east. The land hereabouts, which is of a moderate height, appears more barren than any we have yet seen on this coast, and the soil more sandy, there being several large places, where nothing else is to be seen. In other places the woods look to be low and shrubby, nor did we see many signs of inhabitants. Saturday, 19th. In the p.m. at variable light airs, and calms, in the night had a light breeze from the land, which in the a.m. veered to southwest and south-southwest. In the evening, found the variation to be 8 degrees 36 minutes east, and in the morning 8 degrees 20 minutes. As we had but little wind we keep to the northward all night, having from 23 to 27 fathoms fine sandy bottom, at the distance of 2 or 3 leagues from the land. At noon we were about 4 miles from it, and by observation in the latitude of 25 degrees 4 minutes, and in this situation at but 13 fathoms, the northernmost land in sight bore north 21 degrees west, distant 8 miles. Our course and distance sailed since yesterday at noon was north 13 degrees 15 minutes east, 31 miles. Off Sandy Cape, Queensland. Sunday, 20th. Wind southerly, gentle breezes. At 10 p.m. we passed, at the distance of 4 miles, having 17 fathoms, a black bluff header point of land, on which a number of the natives were assembled, which occasioned my naming it Indian Head. Latitude 25 degrees 0 minutes north by west, 4 miles from this head, is another much like it. From this last the land trends a little more to the westward, and is low and sandy next the sea, for what may be behind it I know not. If land, it must be all low, for we could see no part of it from the masthead. We saw people in other places besides the one I have mentioned. Some smokes in the day and fires in the night. Having but little wind all night, we kept on to the northward, having from 17 to 34 fathoms, from 4 miles to 4 leagues from the land, the northernmost part of which bore from us at daylight west-southwest, and seemed to end in a point, from which we discovered a reef stretching out to the northward as far as we could see, being, at this time, in 18 fathoms. For we had, before it was light, hauled our wind to the westward, and this course we continued until we had plainly discovered breakers a long way upon our lee bow, which seemed to stretch quite home to the land. We then edged away northwest and north-northwest, along the east side of the shoal, from 2 to 1 miles off, having regular, even soundings, from 13 to 7 fathoms, fine sandy bottom. At noon we were, by observation, in the latitude of 24 degrees 26 minutes south, which was 13 miles to the northward of that given by the log. The extreme point of the shoal we judged to bear about northwest of us, and the point of land above mentioned, bore south 3-4 west, distant 20 miles. This point I have named Sandy Cape.
Sandy Cape is the northern point of Great Sandy Island. A long narrow channel separates the latter from the mainland, and opens at its northern end into Harvey Bay, a great sheet of water 40 miles across. This channel is now much used by the coasting trade, as it avoids the long detour round Breaksea Spit, a most dangerous shoal,
on account of two very large white patches of sand upon it. It is of a height sufficient to be seen 12 leagues in clear weather.
Latitude 24 degrees 46 minutes, longitude 206 degrees 51 minutes west.
From it the land trends away west-southwest and southwest as far as we could see. Monday, 21st. In the P.M. we kept along the east side of the shoal until 2, when, judging there was water for us over, I sent a boat ahead to sound, and upon her making the signal for more than 5 fathoms we hauled our wind, and stood over the tail of it in 6 fathoms. At this time we were in the latitude of 24 degrees 22 minutes south, and Sandy Cape bore south 1-2 east, distant 8 leagues, but the direction of the shoal is nearest north-northwest and south-southeast. At this time we had 6 fathoms. The boat which was not above 1/4 of a mile to the southward of us had little more than 5 fathoms. From 6 fathoms we had the next cast, 13, and then 20 immediately, as fast as the man could heave the lead. From this I did suppose, that the west side of the shoal, is pretty steep too, whereas on the other side we had gradual soundings from 13 to 7 fathoms. This shoal I called Breaksea Spit, because now we had smooth water, whereas upon the whole coast to the southward of it, we had always a high sea or swell from the southeast. At 6, the land of Sandy Cape extending from south 17 degrees east to south 27 degrees east, distance 8 leagues, depth of water, 23 fathoms, which depth we kept all night, as we stood to the westward with light airs from the southward. But between 12 and 4 a.m. we had it calm, after which a gentle breeze sprung up at south, with which we still kept on upon a wind to the westward. At 7 we saw from the masthead the land of Sandy Cape bearing southeast 1-2 east, distance 12 or 13 leagues. At 9, we discovered from the masthead land to the westward, and soon after saw smoke upon it. Our depth of water was now decreased to 17 fathoms, and by noon to 13, at which time we were by observation in the latitude of 24 degrees 28 minutes south, and about 7 leagues from the land, which extended from south by west to west northwest. Longitude made from Sandy Cape 0 degrees 45 minutes west. For these few days past we have seen at times a sort of sea fowl we have no where seen before that I remember. They are of the sort called boobies. Before this day we seldom saw more than two or three at a time, and only when we were near the land. Last night a small flock of these birds passed the ship, and went away to the northwest, and this morning from 1 to an hour before sunrise to half an hour after, flights of them were continually coming from the north-northwest, and flying to the south-southeast, and not one was seen to fly in any other direction. From this we did suppose that there was a lagoon, river, or inlet of shallow water to the southward of us, where these birds resorted to in the day to feed, and that not very far to the northward lay some island, where they retired to in the night. Tuesday, 22nd. In the P.M. at a gentle breeze at southeast, with which we stood in for the land southwest until 4, when, being in the latitude of 24 degrees 36 minutes south, and about 2 leagues from land, in 9 fathoms, we bore away along shore northwest by west. At the same time we could see the land extending to the south-southeast about 8 leagues. Near the sea the land is very low, but inland are some moderately high hills, and the whole appeared to be thickly clothed with wood. In running along shore we shouldered our water from 9 to 7 fathoms, and at one time had but 6 fathoms, which determined me to anchor for the night, and accordingly at 8 o'clock we came to in 8 fathoms, fine gravelly bottom, about 5 miles from the land. This evening we saw a water snake, and 2 or 3 evenings ago one lay under the ship's stern some time. This was about 1.12 yards in length, and was the first we had seen. At 6 a.m. weighed with a gentle breeze southerly, and steered northwest 1.4 west, edging in for the land until we got within 2 miles of it, having from 7 to 11 fathoms. We then steered north-northwest as the land laid. At noon we were by observation in the latitude of 24 degrees 19 minutes south, longitude made from Sandy Cape 1 degree 14 minutes west. At anchor, Bustard Bay, Queensland. Right bracket, Wednesday, 23rd. Continued our course along shore at the distance of about 2 miles off, having from 12 to 9, 8 and 7 fathoms, until 5 o'clock, at which time we were abreast of the south point of a large open bay, Bustard Bay, wherein I intended to anchor. Accordingly we hauled in close upon a wind, and sent a boat ahead to sound. After making some trips we anchored at 8 o'clock in 5 fathoms, a sandy bottom. The south point of the bay bore east 3-4 south, distant 2 miles, the north point northwest 1-4 north, about 2 miles from the shore, in the bottom of the bay. Last night, sometime in the middle watch, a very extraordinary affair happened to Mr. Orton, my clerk. He having been drinking in the evening, some malicious person or persons in the ship took advantage of his being drunk, and cut off all the clothes from off his back. Not being satisfied with this, they some time after went into his cabin and cut off a part of both his ears as he lay asleep in his bed. The person whom he suspected to have done this was Mr. Magra, one of the midshipmen. But this did not appear to me. Upon inquiry, however, as I had been told, that Magra had once or twice before this in their drunken frolics cut off his clothes, and had been heard to say, as I was told, that if it was not for the law he would murder him, these things considered, induced me to think that Magra was not altogether innocent. I therefore for the present dismissed him the quarter deck, and suspended him from doing any duty in the ship, he being one of those gentlemen frequently found on board king's ships, that can very well be spared. Besides, it was necessary in me to show my immediate resentment against the person on whom the suspicion fell, lest they should not have stopped here. With respect to Mr. Orton, he is a man not without faults. Yet from all the inquiry I could make, it evidently appeared to me that so far from deserving such treatment, he had not designed injuring any person in the ship, so that I do, and shall always, look upon him as an injured man. Some reasons, however, might be given why this misfortune came upon him, in which he himself was in some measure to blame. But as this is only conjecture, and would tend to fix it upon some people in the ship, whom I would fain believe would hardly be guilty of such an action, I shall say nothing about it, unless I shall hereafter discover the offenders, which I shall take every method in my power to do, for I look upon such proceedings as highly dangerous in such voyages as this, and the greatest insult that could be offered to my authority in this ship, as I have always been ready to hear and redress every complaint that have been made against any person in the ship.
This history of Mr. Orton's misadventure is omitted from the Admiralty copy. It is an illustration of the times to note that the fact of Orton having got drunk does not seem to call for the captain's severe censure. In these days, though the practical joker receives punishment, the drunkard would certainly come in for a large share also.
And I went ashore with a party of men in order to examine the country, accompanied by Mr. Banks and the other gentlemen. We landed a little within the south point of the bay, where there is a channel leading into a large lagoon. The first thing that I did was to sound and examine the channel, in which I found 3 fathoms, until I got about a mile up it, where I met with a shoal, whereon was little more than 1 fathom. Being over this, I had 3 fathoms again. The entrance into this channel lies close to the south point of this bay, being formed on the east by the shore, and on the west by a large spit of sand. It is about 1/4 of a mile broad, and lies in south by west. Here is room for a few ships to lay very secure, and a small stream of fresh water. After this I made a little excursion into the woods, while some hands made 3 or 4 hauls with the shawn, but caught not above 12 very small fish. By this time the flood was made, and I embarked in the boats in order to row up the lagoon, but in this, I was hindered by meeting everywhere with shoal water. As yet we had seen no people, but saw a great deal of smoke up and on the west side of the lagoon, which was all too far off for us to go by land, excepting one. This we went to and found 10 small fires in a very small compass, and some cockle shells laying by them, but the people were gone. On the windward or south side of one of the fires, was stuck up a little bark about 1.5 feet high, and some few pieces lay about in other places. These we concluded were all the covering they had in the night, and many of them, I firmly believe, have not this, but, naked as they are, sleep in the open air. Tupia, who was with us, observed that they were Tadainos, that is, bad or poor people. The country is visibly worse than at the last place we were at. The soil is dry and sandy, and the woods are free from underwoods of every kind. Here are of the same sort of trees as we found in Botany Harbor, with a few other sorts. One sort, which is by far the most numerous sort of any in the woods, grows something like birch. The bark at first sight looks like birch bark, but upon examination I found it to be very different, and so I believe is the wood. But this I could not examine, as having no axe or anything with me to cut down a tree. About the skirts of the lagoon, grows the true mangrove, such as are found in the West Indies, and which we have not seen during the voyage before. Here is likewise a sort of a palm tree, which grows on low, barren, sandy places in the South Sea Islands. All, or most of the same sort, of land and waterfowl as we saw at Botany Harbor we saw here. Besides these we saw some bustards, such as we have in England, one of which we killed, that weighed 17.12 pounds, which occasioned my giving this place the name of Bustard Bay.
Latitude 24 degrees 4 minutes, longitude 208 degrees 22 minutes west.
We likewise saw some black and white ducks. Here are plenty of small oysters sticking to the rocks, stones, and mangrove trees, and some few other shellfish, such as large mussels, pearl oysters, cockles, etc. I measured the perpendicular height of the last tide, and found it to be 8 feet above low water mark, and from the time of low water today I found that it must be high water at the full, and change of the moon at 8 o'clock. Thursday, 24th. In the P. M. I was employed ashore in the transactions before related. At 4 a.m. we weighed with a gentle breeze at south, and made sail out of the bay. And standing out our soundings, were from 5 to 15 fathoms. When in this last depth we were abreast of the north point, and being daylight we discovered breakers stretching out from it about north-northeast, 2 or 3 miles. At the outermost point of them is a rock just above water. And passing these rocks at the distance of 1 to 1 mile we had from 15 to 20 fathoms. Being past them, we hauled along shore west-northwest for the farthest land we had in sight. At noon we were by observation in the latitude of 23 degrees 52 minutes south. The north part of Bustard Bay bore south 62 degrees east, distance 10 miles, and the northernmost land in sight north 60 degrees west. Longitude in 208 degrees 37 minutes west, distance from the nearest shore 6 miles. In this situation at 14 fathoms water. Off Cape Capricorn, Queensland. Friday, 25th. And the P.M. added calm until 5, when a light breeze sprung up at southeast, and we steered northwest as the land lay until 10, then brought to, having had all along 14 and 15 fathoms. At 5 a.m. we made sail. At daylight the northernmost point of the main bore north 70 degrees west, and soon after we saw more land making like islands, bearing northwest by north. At 9 we were abreast of the point, distant from it 1 mile, depth of water 14 fathoms. I found this point to lay directly under the Tropic of Capricorn, and for that reason call it by that name. Longitude 209 degrees 0 minutes west. It is of a moderate height, and looks white and barren, and may be known by some islands which lie to the northwest of it, and some small rocks 1 league southeast from it. On the west side of the cape there appeared to be a lagoon. On the 2 spits which form the entrance were a great number of pelicans, at least, so I call them. The most northernmost land we could see bore from Cape Capricorn north 24 degrees west, and appeared to be an island, Hummocky Island. But the main land trended west by north 1 to north, which course we steered, having from 15 to 16 fathoms, and from 6 to 9, a hard sandy bottom. At noon our latitude by observation was 23 degrees 24 minutes south. Cape Capricorn bore south 60 degrees east, distance 2 leagues, a small island north by east 2 miles. In this situation, had 9 fathoms at the distance of 4 miles from the main land, which is here low and sandy next to the sea, except the points which are moderately high and rocky. Inland the country is hilly, and affords but a very indifferent prospect.
Between Bustard Bay and Cape Capricorn is Port Curtis, in which stands the small town of Gladstone. Cape Capricorn is the eastern point of Curtis Island, and to the northward is Keppel Bay, into which falls the Fitzroy River. Up the latter, 35 miles from the sea, is Rockhampton, the second largest town of Queensland. All this coast is encumbered with shoals, outside of which Cook had so far prudently kept. To seaward begins the long chain of islands, and reefs known as the Great Australian Barrier, which stretches up to Torres Straits. Cook was unaware of their existence, as they were out of sight, but he became painfully acquainted with them later, where the reefs approach the land, and make navigation along the coast anxious work. But he here began to get into difficulties with the shoals which stretch off the coast itself.
Saturday, 26th. In the P.M. light breezes at east-southeast, with which we stood to the northwest until 4 o'clock, when it fell calm, and soon after we anchored in 12 fathoms. Cape Capricorn bearing south 54 degrees east, distant 4 leagues, having the main land and islands in a manner all around us. In the night we found the tide to rise, and fall near 7 feet, and the flood to set to the westward, and ebb to the eastward. Which is quite the reverse to what we found it, when at anchor to the eastward of Bustard Bay. At 6 a.m. we weighed with the wind at south, a gentle breeze, and stood away to the northwest, between the outermost range of islands, the Keppel Islands. and the mainland, leaving several small islands between us and the latter, which we passed close by. Our soundings was a little irregular, from 12 to 4 fathoms, which caused me to send a boat ahead to sound. At noon we were about 3 miles from the main, about the same distance from the islands without us. Our latitude by observation was 23 degrees 7 minutes south, and longitude made from Cape Capricorn 18 miles west. The mainland in this latitude is tolerable high and mountainous, and the islands which lay off it are the most of them pretty high, and of a small circuit, and have more the appearance of barrenness than fertility. We saw smooks a good way inland, which makes me think there must be a river, lagoon, or inlet, into the country, and we passed two places that had the appearance of such this morning, but our depth of water at that time was too little to haul in for them, where I might expect to meet with less. Sunday, 27th. We had not stood on to the northward quite an hour before we fell into 3 fathoms, upon which I anchored, and sent away the master with 2 boats to sound the channel, which lay to leeward of us between the northernmost island and the mainland, which appeared to me to be pretty broad. But I suspected that it was shoal, and so it was found, for the master reported to me upon his return that he found in many places only 2 1/2 fathoms, and where we lay at anchor we had only 16 feet, which was not 2 feet more than the ship drew.
This was between Great Keppel Island and the main. There is a mass of shoals here.
In the evening the wind veered to east-northeast, which gave us an opportunity to stretch 3 or 4 miles back the way we came before the wind shifted to south, and obliged us again to anchor in 6 fathoms. At 5 o'clock in the a.m., I sent away the master with 2 boats to search for a passage out between the islands, while the ship got under sail. As soon as it was light the signal was made by the boats of their having found a passage, upon which we hoisted in the boats, and made sail to the northward as the land lay, soundings from 9 to 15 fathoms, having still some small islands without us.
The ship passed out between Great Keppel Island and North Keppel Island.
At noon we were about 2 leagues from the mainland, and by observation in the latitude of 22 degrees 53 minutes south, longitude made from Cape Capricorn 0 degrees 20 minutes west. At this time the northernmost point of land we had in sight bore north-northwest, distance 10 miles. This point I named Cape Manifold, from the number of high hills over it, latitude 22 degrees 43 minutes south. It lies north 20 degrees west, distant 17 leagues from Cape Capricorn. Between them the shore forms a large bay, which I call it Keppel Bay, and the islands which lay in and off it are known by the same name. In this bay is good anchorage, where there is a sufficient depth of water. What refreshment it may afford for shipping I know not.
As before mentioned, the Fitzroy River falls into Keppel Bay, and forms a good harbor, though much encumbered with sandbanks.
We caught no fish here, notwithstanding we were at anchor. It can hardly be doubted, but what it afforded fresh water in several places, as both mainland and islands are inhabited. We saw smokes by day and fires in the night upon the main, and people upon one of the islands. Off Cape Townshend, Queensland. Monday, 28th. Winds at south-southeast, a fresh breeze. At 3 o'clock in the p.m. we passed Cape Manifold, from which the land trends north-northwest. The land of this cape is tolerable high, and riseth in hills directly from the sea. It may be known by 3 islands laying off it, one near the shore, and the other 2 8 miles out at sea. The one of these is low and flat, and the other high and round.
Peak and flat islands.
At 6 o'clock we shortened sail and brought to. The northernmost part of the main we had in sight bore northwest, and some islands lying off it bore north 31 degrees west. Our soundings since noon were from 20 to 25 fathoms, and in the night 30 and 34 fathoms. At daylight we made sail, Cape Manifold bearing south by east, distance 8 leagues, and the island set last night in the same directions, distance from us 4 miles. The farthest point of the main, bore north 67 degrees west, distant 22 miles. But we could see several islands to the northward of this direction.
The easternmost of the Northumberland Islands.
At 9 o'clock we were abreast of the above point, which I named Cape Townshend.
Charles Townshend was Chancellor of the Exchequer 1767. Latitude 22 degrees 13 minutes, longitude 209 degrees 48 minutes west.
The land of this cape is of a moderate and pretty even height, and is more barren than woody. Several islands lay to the northward of it, 4 or 5 leagues out at sea. 3 or 4 leagues to the southeast the shore forms a bay,
Shoalwater Bay, a large inlet,
in the bottom of which there appeared to be an inlet or harbor to the westward of the coast, and trends southwest 1 to south, and these form a very large bay, which turns away to the eastward, and probably communicates with the inlet above mentioned, and by that means makes the land of the Cape an island. As soon as we got round the cape we hauled our wind to the westward in order to get within the islands which lay scattered up and down in this bay in great number, and extend out to sea as far as we could see from the masthead. How much farther will hardly be in my power to determine. They are as various in their height and circuit as they are numerous.
The Northumberland Islands, a very extensive group.
We had not stood long upon a wind before we meet with shoal water, and was obliged to tack about to avoid it, after which I sent a boat ahead, and we bore away west by north, leaving many small islands, rocks, and shoals between us and the main, and a number of large islands without us, soundings from 14 to 17 fathoms, sandy bottom. A little before noon the boat made the signal for meeting with shoal water, upon which we hauled close upon a wind to the eastward, but suddenly fell into 3 1/4 fathoms water, upon which we immediately let go an anchor, and brought the ship up with all sails standing, and at then 4 fathoms coarse sandy bottom. We found here a strong tide setting to the northwest by west 1 to west, at the rate of between 2 and 3 miles an hour, which was what carried us so quickly upon the shoal. Our latitude by observation was 22 degrees 8 minutes south. Cape Townshend bore east 16 degrees south, distant 13 miles, and the westernmost part of the mainland in sight west 3-4 north, having a number of islands in sight all around us.
The ship was on the Donovan Shoal in Broad Sound Channel.
Tuesday, 29th. Fresh gales between the south-southeast and east-southeast, hazy weather, with some showers of rain. In the P.M., having sounded about the ship, and found that there was sufficient water for her over the shoal, we at 3 o'clock weighed and made sail, and stood to the westward as the land lay, having first sent a boat ahead to sound. At 6 we anchored in 10 fathoms, sandy bottom, about 2 miles from the mainland, the westernmost part of which bore west-northwest, having still a number of islands in sight a long way without us. At 5 a.m., I sent away the master with 2 boats, to sound the entrance of an inlet, which bore from us west, distance about 1 league, into which I intended to go with the ship, to wait a few days, until the moon increased, and in the meantime to examine the country. By such time as we had got the ship under sail the boats made the signal for anchorage, upon which we stood in with the ship, and anchored in 5 fathoms, about a league within the entrance of the inlet, which we judged to be a river running a good way inland, as I observed the tides to flow, and ebb something considerable.
It is in reality a narrow channel which runs into Broad Sound.
I had some thoughts of laying the ship ashore to clean her bottom. With this view both the master and I went to look for a convenient place for that purpose, and at the same time, to look for fresh water, not one drop of which we could find, but met with several places, where a ship might be laid ashore with safety. At anchor, Thirsty Sound. Wednesday, 30th. In the P.M. I went again in search of fresh water, but had no better success than before, Wherefore I gave over all thoughts of laying the ship ashore, being resolved to spend as little time as possible in a place that was likely to afford us no sort of refreshment. But as I had observed from the hills the inlet to run a good way in, I thought this a good time to penetrate into the country, to see a little of the inland parts. Accordingly I prepared for making that excursion in the morning, but the first thing I did was to get upon a pretty high hill, which is at the northwest entrance of the inlet, before sunrise, in order to take a view of the sea coast and islands, etc., that lay off it, and to take their bearings, having the azimuth compass with me for that purpose, the needle of which differed from its true position something very considerable, even above 30 degrees, in some places more, and in other less, for I tried it in several places. I found it differ in itself above 2 points, in the space of about 14 feet. The loose stones which lay upon the ground had no effect upon the needle. I therefore concluded that it must be owing to iron ore upon the hill, visible signs of which appeared not only here, but in several other places. As soon as I had done here I proceeded up the inlet. I set out with the first of the flood, and long before high water got about 8 leagues up it. Its breadth thus far was from 2 to 4 or 5 miles upon a southwest by south direction. But here it spread every way, and formed a large lake, which communicated with the sea to the northwest. I not only saw the sea in this direction, but found the tide of flood coming strong in from the northwest. I likewise observed an arm of this lake extending to the eastward, and it is not at all improbable, but what it communicates with the sea in the bottom of the bay, which lies to the westward of Cape Townshend.
This is exactly what it does.
On the south side of the lake is a ridge of pretty high hills, which I was desirous of going upon. But as the day was far spent and high water, I was afraid of being bewildered among the shoals in the night, which promised to be none of the best, being already rainy, dirty weather, and therefore I made the best of my way to the ship. In this little excursion I saw only 2 people, and those at a distance, and are all that we have seen in this place, but we have met with several fireplaces, and seen smokes at a distance. This inlet, which I have named Thirsty Sound, by reason we could find no fresh water, lies in the latitude of 22 degrees 05 minutes south, and longitude 210 degrees 24 west. It may be known by a group of small islands laying under the shore from 2 to 5 leagues northwest from it.
Barren islands.
There is likewise another group of islands laying right before it between 3 and 4 leagues out at sea.
Duke Islands.
Over each of the points that form the entrance is a pretty high, round hill, that on the northwest is a peninsula, surrounded by the sea at high water. The distance from the one to the other is about 2 miles bold to both shores. Here is good anchoring in 7, 6, 5, and 4 fathoms water, and very convenient places for laying a ship ashore, where at spring tides the tides doth not rise less than 16 or 18 feet, and flows at full, and change of the moon about 11 o'clock. We met with no fresh water, or any other kind of refreshments whatever. We saw 2 turtle, but caught none, nor no sort of fish or wild fowl, except a few small land birds. Here are the same sort of waterfowl as we saw in Botany Bay, and like them, so shy that it is hardly possible to get within shot of them. No signs of fertility is to be seen upon the land. The soil of the uplands is mostly a hard, reddish clay, and produceth several sorts of trees, such as we have seen before, and some others, and clear of all underwoods. All the lowlands are mostly overrun with mangroves, and at spring tides overflowed by the sea, and I believe in the rainy seasons here are large land floods, as we saw in many places gullies, which seemed to have been made by torrents of water coming from the adjacent hills, besides other visible signs of the water having been a considerable height above the common spring tides. Dr. Solander and I was upon a rising ground up the inlet, which we thought had at one time or another been overflowed by the sea, and if so great part of the country must at that time been laid under water. up in the lakes, or lagoons, I suppose, are shellfish, on which the few natives subsist. We found oysters sticking to most of the rocks upon the shore, which were so small as not to be worth the picking off.
Cook was very unfortunate in his landing here. The channel is at the end of a long headland between two bays, Shoalwater Bay and Broad Sound, and was a very unlikely place either to find water or get any true idea of the country.
Thursday, 31st. Wind southerly and southeast. Dark, hazy weather, with rain. And the P.M., finding no one inducement to stay longer in this place, we at 6 a.m. weighed and put to sea and stood to the northwest, having the advantage of a fresh breeze at south-southeast. We kept without the group of islands which lay inshore and to the northwest of Thirsty Sound, as there appeared to be no safe passage between them and the main. At the same time we had a number of islands without us extending out to sea as far as we could see. As we run in this direction our depth of water was 10, 8 and 9 fathoms.
The ship passed between the Duke Islands and the maze of reefs and islands lying northwest of Thirsty Sound.
At noon the northwest point of Thirsty Sound, which I have named Pierhead, bore south 36 degrees east, distant 5 leagues. The east point of the other inlet, which communicates with the former, as I have before mentioned, bore south by west, distance 212 leagues, the group of islands above mentioned laying between us and the point. The farthest part of the main in sight, on the other side of the inlet, bore northwest. Our latitude by observation was 21 degrees 53 minutes south.
June 1770.
Friday, June 1st. At 1-2 an hour afternoon, upon the boat we had ahead sounding making the signal for shoal water, we hauled our wind to the northeast, having at that time 7 fathoms, the next cast 5, and then 3, upon which we let go an anchor, and brought the ship up. The northwest point of Thirsty Sound, or Pierhead, bore southeast, distance 6 leagues, being midway between the islands which lies off the east point of the western inlet, and 3 small islands directly without them.
The shoal is now known as Lake Shoal. The 3 islands are the Bedwell Islands.
It being now the first of the flood which we found to set northwest by west 1-2 west. After having sounded about the shoal, on which we found not quite 3 fathoms, but without a deep water, we got under sail, and hauled round the 3 islands just mentioned, and came to an anchor under the lee of them in 15 fathoms, having at this time dark, hazy, rainy weather, which continued until 7 o'clock a.m., at which time we got again under sail, and stood to the northwest with a fresh breeze at south-southeast and fair weather, having the main land in sight, and a number of islands all round us, some of which lay out at sea as far as we could see. The western inlet before mentioned, known in the chart by the name of Broad Sound, we had now all open. It is at least 9 or 10 leagues wide at the entrance, with several islands laying in and before, and I believe shoals also, for we had very irregular soundings, from 10 to 5 and 4 fathoms. At noon we were by observation in the latitude of 21 degrees 29 minutes south, and longitude made from Cape Townshend 59 degrees west. A point of land, which forms the northwest entrance into Broad Sound, bore from us at this time west, distance 3 leagues. This cape I have named Cape Palmerston.
Henry Viscount Palmerston was a Lord of the Admiralty, 1766-1778. Latitude 21 degrees 27 minutes south, longitude 210 degrees 57 minutes west.
Between this cape and Cape Townshend lies the Bay of Inlets, so named from the number of inlets, creeks, etc., in it.
The name Bay of Inlets has disappeared from the charts. Cook applied it to the whole mass of bays in this locality, covering over 60 miles. A look at a modern chart causes amazement that Cook managed to keep his ship off the ground, as the whole sea in his track is strewed with dangers.
Off Cape Hillsborough, Queensland. Saturday, 2nd. Winds at south-southeast and southeast, a gentle breeze, with which we stood to the northwest and northwest by north, as the land lay under an easy sail. Having a boat ahead, found our soundings at first were very irregular, from 9 to 4 fathoms, but afterwards regular, from 9 to 11 fathoms. At 8, being about 2 leagues from the mainland, we anchored in 11 fathoms, sandy bottom. Soon after this, we found the slow motion of a tide seeding to the eastward, and rode so until 6, at which time the tide had risen 11 feet. We now got under sail, and stood away north-northwest as the land lay. From the observations made on the tide last night, it is plain that the flood comes from the northwest, whereas yesterday and for several days before we found it to come from the southeast. This is neither the first nor second time that we have observed the same thing, and in my opinion easy accounted for, but this I shall do in another place. At sunrise we found the variation to be 6 degrees 45 minutes east, and steering along shore between the island and the main, at the distance of 2 leagues from the latter, and 3 or 4 from the former, our soundings were regular, from 12 to 9 fathoms. But about 11 o'clock we were again embarrassed with shoal water, Blackwood Shoals, but got clear without letting go an anchor. We had at one time not quite 3 fathoms. At noon we were about 2 leagues from the mainland, and about 4 from the islands without us. Our latitude by observation was 20 degrees 56 minutes south, longitude made from Cape Palmerston 16 degrees west. A pretty high promontory, which I named Cape Hillsborough.
Earl of Hillsborough was the first Secretary of State for the Colonies, and President of the Board of Trade when the Endeavour sailed.
Bore west 1-2 north, distant 7 miles. The mainland is here pretty much diversified with mountains, hills, plains, and valleys, and seemed to be tolerably clothed with wood and verdure. These islands, which lay parallel with the coast, and from 5 to 8 or 9 leagues off, are of various extent, both for height and circuit. Hardly any exceeds 5 leagues in circuit, and many again are very small.
The Cumberland Islands. They stretch along the coast for 60 miles.
Besides the chain of islands, which lay at a distance from the coast, there are other small ones laying under the land. Some few smokes were seen on the mainland. Sunday, 3rd. Winds between the south by east and southeast. A gentle breeze and clear weather. In the P.M. we steered along shore northwest 1-2 west, at the distance of 2 leagues from the main, having 9 and 10 fathoms regular soundings. At sunset the furthest point of the mainland that we could distinguish as such bore north 48 degrees west. To the northward of this lay some high land, which I took to be an island, the northwest point of which bore north 41 degrees west. But as I was not sure that there was a passage this way, we at 8, came to an anchor in 10 fathoms, muddy bottom. 2 hours after this, we had a tide setting to the northward, and at 2 o'clock it had fallen 9 feet since the time we anchored. After this the tide began to rise, and the flood came from the northward, which was from the islands out at sea, and plainly indicated that there was no passage to the northwest. But as this did not appear at daylight, when we got under sail, and stood away to the northwest until 8, at this time we discovered low land, quite across what we took for an opening between the main and the islands, which proved to be a bay about 5 or 6 leagues deep. Upon this we hauled our wind to the eastward round the northernmost point of the bay, which bore from us at this time northeast by north, distance 4 leagues. From this point we found the mainland trend away north by west 1-2 west, and a straighter passage between it, and a large island,
Whitsunday Island,
or islands laying in a parallel direction with the coast. This passage we stood in too, having the tide of ebb in our favor. At noon we were just within the entrance, and by observation in the latitude of 20 degrees 26 minutes south, Cape Hillsborough bore south by east, distant 10 leagues, and the north point of the bay before mentioned bore south 19 degrees west, distance 4 miles. This point I have named Cape Conway,
General H. S. Conway was Secretary of State 1765 to 1768. Latitude 20 degrees 30 minutes, longitude 211 degrees 28 minutes,
and the bay, Repulse Bay, which is formed by these two capes. The greatest and least depth of water we found, in it was 13 and 8 fathoms. Everywhere safe anchoring, and I believe, was it properly examined, there would be found some good harbor in it, especially on the north side within Cape Conway, for just within the cape, lay two or three small islands, which alone would shelter that side of the bay from the southeast and southerly winds, which seem to be the prevailing or trade winds. Among the many islands that lay upon this coast there is one more remarkable than the rest,
probably Blacksmith Island.
Being of a small circuit, very high and peaked, and lies east by south, 10 miles from Cape Conway at the south end of the passage above mentioned. In Whitsunday Passage, Queensland. Monday, 4th. Winds at south southeast and southeast, a gentle breeze and clear weather. In the P.M. steered through the passage,
Whitsunday Passage. The aspect of the shores is very pleasing,
which we found from 3 to 6 or 7 miles broad, and 8 or 9 leagues in length, north by west 1 to west and south by east 1 to east. It is formed by the main on the west, and by islands on the east, one of which is at least 5 leagues in length. Our depth of water in running through was between 25 and 20 fathoms. Everywhere good anchorage. Indeed, the whole passage is one continued safe harbor, besides a number of small bays and coves on each side, where ships might lay as it were in a basin. At least so it appeared to me, for I did not wait to examine it, as having been in port so lately, and being unwilling to lose the benefit of a light moon. The land, both on the main and islands, especially on the former, is tolerably high, and distinguished by hills and valleys, which are diversified with woods and lawns, that look green and pleasant. On a sandy beach upon one of the islands we saw two people and a canoe, with an outrigger, which appeared to be both larger and differently built to any we have seen upon the coast. At 6 we were nearly the length of the north end of the passage. The northwesternmost point of the main in sight bore north 54 degrees west, and the north end of the island north-northeast, having an open sea between these two points. This passage I have named Whitsunday's Passage, as it was discovered on the day the church commemorates that festival, and the isles which form it Cumberland Isles, in honor of His Royal Highness the Duke of Cumberland.
Henry Frederick, Duke of Cumberland, was a younger brother of George III.
We kept under an easy sail, and the lead going all night, having 21, 22, and 23 fathoms, at the distance of 3 leagues from the land. At daylight a.m. we were abreast of the point above mentioned, which is a lofty promontory, that I named Cape Gloucester.
William Henry, Duke of Gloucester and Edinburgh, a younger brother of George III. Latitude 19 degrees 57 minutes south, longitude 211 degrees 54 minutes west.
It may be known by an island which lies out at sea north by west 1 to west, 5 or 6 leagues from it. This I called Holborn Isle.
Admiral Francis Holborn commanded the fleet in North America in which Cook served in 1757.
There are also islands laying under the land between it and Whitsunday's Passage. On the west side of the cape the land trends away southwest and south-southwest, and forms a deep bay. The sand in the bottom of this bay I could but just see from the masthead. It is very low, and is a continuation of the same low land as is at the bottom of Repulse Bay. Without waiting to look into this bay, which I called Edgecombe Bay,
in Port Denison, on the western side of Edgecombe Bay, is the rising town of Bowen, the port of an agricultural district. There is good coal in the vicinity. Captain G. Edgecombe commanded the Lancaster in the fleet in North America in 1758 in which Cook served. Afterwards Earl of Mount Edgecombe.
We continued our course to the westward for the westernmost land we had in sight which bore from us west by north 1 to north, and appeared very high. At noon we were about 3 leagues from the land, and by observation in the latitude of 19 degrees 47 minutes south, Cape Gloucester bearing south 63 degrees east, distant 712 leagues. Tuesday, 5th. Winds between the south and east, a gentle breeze, and serene weather. At 6 a.m. we were abreast of the western point of land above mentioned, distant from it 3 miles, which I have named Cape Upstart, because being surrounded with low land it starts or rises up singly at the first making of it.
Latitude 19 degrees 39 minutes south, longitude 212 degrees 32 minutes west.
It lies west-northwest 14 leagues from Cape Gloucester, and is of a height sufficient to be seen 12 leagues. But it is not so much of a promontory as it appears to be, because on each side of it near the sea is very low land, which is not to be seen, unless you are pretty well in with the shore. Inland are some tolerable high hills or mountains, which, like the cape, affords but a very barren prospect. Having passed this cape, we continued standing to the west-northwest as the land lay, under an easy sail, having from 16 to 10 fathoms, until 2 o'clock a.m., when we fell into 7 fathoms, upon which we hauled our wind to the northward, judging ourselves to be very near the land, as so we found, for at daylight we were little more than 2 leagues off. What deceived us was the lowness of the land, which is but very little higher than the surface of the sea, but in the country were some hills. At noon we were in 15 fathoms water, and about 4 leagues from the land. Our latitude by observation was 19 degrees 12 minutes south. Cape Upstart bore 38 degrees 30 minutes east, distant 12 leagues. Course and distance sailed since yesterday noon north 48 degrees 45 minutes, 53 miles. At and before noon some very large smokes were seen rise up out of the low land. At sunrise I found the variation to be 5 degrees 35 minutes easterly. At sunset last night the same needle gave near 9 degrees. This being close under Cape Upstart, I judged that it was owing to iron ore, or other magnetical matter lodged in the earth. Off Cleveland Bay, Queensland. Wednesday, 6th. Light airs at east-southeast, with which we steered west-northwest as the land now lay. Depth of water 12 and 14 fathoms. At noon we were by observation in the latitude of 19 degrees 1 minute south. Longitude made from Cape Gloucester 1 degree 30 minutes west. Course and distance sailed since yesterday noon west-northwest, 28 miles. In this situation we had the mouth of a bay all open extending from south 1 to east to southwest 1 to south, distance 2 leagues. This bay, which I named Cleveland Bay,
in Cleveland Bay is Townsville, the largest town in northern Queensland. Population 12,000.
Appeared to be about 5 or 6 miles in extent every way. The east point I named Cape Cleveland, and the west, Magnetical Header Island, as it had much the appearance of an island, and the compass did not traverse well when near it. They are both tolerable high, and so is the main land within them, and the whole appeared to have the most rugged, rocky, and barren surface of any we have yet seen. However, it is not without inhabitants, as we saw smoke in several places in the bottom of the bay. The northernmost land we had in sight at this time bore northwest. This we took to be an island or islands, for we could not trace the main land farther than west by north. Thursday, 7th. Light airs between the south and east, with which we steered west-northwest, keeping the main land on board, the outermost part of which at sunset bore from us west by north. But without this lay high land, which we took to be islands. At daylight a.m. we were the length of the eastern part of this land, which we found to consist of a group of islands,
Palm Islands,
laying about 5 leagues from the main. We being at this time between the two, we continued advancing slowly to the northwest until noon, at which time we were by observation in the latitude of 18 degrees 49 minutes, and about 5 leagues from the main land, the northwest part of which bore from us north by west 1 to west, the island extending from north to east, distance of the nearest 2 miles. Cape Cleveland bore south 50 degrees east, distant 18 leagues. Our soundings in the course of this day's sail were from 14 to 11 fathoms. Friday, 8th. Winds at south southeast and south. First part light airs, the remainder a gentle breeze. And the P.M. we saw several large smokes upon the main, some people, canoes, and, as we thought, coconut trees upon one of the islands, and, as a few of these nuts would have been very acceptable to us at this time, I sent Lieutenant Hicks ashore, with whom went Mr. Banks and Dr. Solander, to see what was to be got. In the meantime we kept standing in for the island with the ship. At 7 they returned on board, having met with nothing worth observing. The trees we saw were a small kind of cabbage palms. They heard some of the natives as they were putting off from the shore, but saw none. After the boat was hoisted in, we stood away north by west for the northernmost land we had in sight, which we were abreast of at 3 o'clock in the morning, having passed all the islands 3 or 4 hours before. This point I have named Point Hillock.
Point Hillock is the east point of Hinchinbrook Island, which is separated from the main by a narrow and tortuous channel.
On account of its figure, the land of this point is tolerable high, and may be known by a round hillock or rock that appears to be detached from the point, but I believe it joins to it. Between this cape and Cape Cleveland the shore forms a large bay, which I named Halifax Bay.
The Earl of Halifax was Secretary of State 1763 to 1765.
Before it lay the groups of islands before mentioned, and some others nearer the shore. These islands shelter the bay in a manner from all winds, in which is good anchorage. The land near the shore in the bottom of the bay is very low and woody, but a little way back in the country is a continued ridge of high land, which appeared to be barren and rocky. Having passed Point Hillock, we continued standing to the north-northwest as the land trended, having the advantage of a light moon. At 6 a.m. we were abreast of a point of land which lies north by west 1-2 west, 11 miles from Point Hillock. The land between them is very high, and of a craggy, barren surface. This point I named Cape Sandwich.
Earl of Sandwich was first Lord of the Admiralty 1763.
It may not only be known by the high, craggy land over it, but by a small island which lies east 1 mile from it, and some others about 2 leagues to the northward of it. From Cape Sandwich the land trends west, and afterwards north, and forms a fine, large bay, which I called Rockingham Bay.
The Marquis of Rockingham was Prime Minister 1765 to 1766.
It is well sheltered, and affords good anchorage. At least, so it appeared to me, for having met with so little encouragement by going ashore, that I would not wait to land or examine it farther, but continued to range along shore to the northward for a parcel of small islands,
the Family Islands,
laying off the northern point of the bay, and finding a channel of a mile broad between the three outermost and those nearer the shore, we pushed through. While we did this, we saw on one of the nearest islands a number of the natives collected together, who seemed to look very attentively upon the ship. They were quite naked, and of a very dark color, with short hair. At noon we were by observation in the latitude of 17 degrees 59 minutes, and abreast of the north point of Rockingham Bay, which bore from us west 2 miles. This boundary of the bay is formed by a tolerable high island, known in the chart by the name of Dunk Isle. It lay so near the shore as not to be distinguished from it, unless you are well in with the land. At this time we were in the longitude of 213 degrees 57 minutes. Cape Sandwich bore south by east 1-2 east, distant 19 miles, and the northernmost land in sight north 1-2 west. Our depth of water in the course of this day's sail was not more than 16, nor less than 7, fathoms.
About here the Great Barrier Reefs begin to close in on the land. Cook kept so close to the latter that he was unconscious as yet of their existence, but he was soon to find them.
Anchored near Cape Grafton, Queensland. Saturday, 9th. Winds between the south and southeast, a gentle breeze, and clear weather, with which we steered north by west as the land lay, the northern extreme of which at sunset bore north 25 degrees west. We kept on our course under an easy sail all night, having from 12 to 16 fathoms, at the distance of about 3 or 4 leagues from the land. At 6 a.m. we were abreast of some small islands, which we called Frankland Isles, that lay about 2 leagues from the mainland, the northern point of which in sight bore north by west 12 west, but this we afterwards found to be an island, Fitzroy Island. Tolerable high, and about 4 miles in circuit. It lies about 2 miles from the point on the main between which we went with the ship, and were in the middle of the channel at noon, and by observation in the latitude of 16 degrees 55 minutes, where we had 20 fathoms of water. The point of land we were now abreast of I called Cape Grafton.
The Duke of Grafton was Prime Minister when Cook sailed. Latitude 16 degrees 55 minutes south, longitude 214 degrees 11 minutes west.
It is tolerable high, and so is the whole coast 420 leagues to the southward, and hath a very rocky surface, which is thinly covered with wood. In the night we saw several fires along shore, and a little before noon some people. Sunday, 10th. After hauling round Cape Grafton we found the land trend away northwest by west. 3 miles to the westward of the cape is a bay, wherein we anchored, about 2 miles from the shore, in 4 fathoms, ocean bottom. The east point of the bay bore south 74 degrees east, the west point south 83 degrees west, and a low green woody island laying in the offing bore north 35 degrees east. The island lies north by east 12 east, distance 3 or 4 leagues from Cape Grafton, and is known in the chart by the name of Green Island. As soon as the ship was brought to an anchor I went ashore, accompanied by Mr. Banks and Dr. Solander. The first thing I did was to look for fresh water, and with that view rowed out towards the cape, because in the bottom of the bay was low mangrove land, and little probability of meeting with any there. But the way I went I found 2 small streams, which were difficult to get at on account of the surf and rocks upon the shore. As we came round the cape we saw, in a sandy cove, a small stream of water run over the beach. But here I did not go in the boat, because I found that it would not be easy to land. We hardly advanced anything into the country, it being here hilly, which were steep and rocky, and we had not time to visit the low lands, and therefore met with nothing remarkable. My intention was to have stayed here at least one day, to have looked into the country had we met with fresh water convenient, or any other refreshment. But as we did not, I thought it would be only spending of time, and losing as much of a light moon to little purpose, and therefore at 12 o'clock at night we weighed, and stood away to the northwest, having at this time but little wind, attended with showers of rain.
In the next bay west of where Cook anchored is Cairns, a small but rising town in the center of a sugar-growing district.
At 4 the breeze freshened at south by east, with fair weather. We continued steering north-northwest 12 west as the land lay, having 10, 12, and 14 fathoms, at a distance of 3 leagues from the land. At 11 we hauled off north, in order to get without a small low island,
Low Isles. There is now a lighthouse on them,
which lay about 2 leagues from the main. It being about high water, about the time we passed it, great part of it lay under water. About 3 leagues to the northwestward of this island, close under the mainland, is another island,
Snapper Island.
Tolerable high, which bore from us at noon north 55 degrees west, distant 7 or 8 miles, we being at this time in the latitude of 16 degrees 20 minutes south. Cape Grafton bore south 29 degrees east, distant 40 miles, and the northernmost point of land in sight north 20 degrees west, and in this situation at 15 fathoms water. The shore between Cape Grafton and the above northern point forms a large, but not very deep bay, which I named Trinity Bay, after the day on which it was discovered. The north point Cape Tribulation, because here began all our troubles. latitude 16 degrees 6 minutes south, longitude 214 degrees 39 minutes west. The ship aground on Endeavour Reef. Right bracket, Monday, 11th. Wind at east southeast, with which we steered along shore north by west at the distance of 3 or 4 leagues off, having from 14 to 10 and 12 fathoms water. Saw two small islands in the offing, which lay in the latitude of 16 degrees 0 minutes south, and about 6 or 7 leagues from the main. At 6 the northernmost land in sight bore north by west 12 west, and two low, woody islands, Hope Islands, which some took to be rocks above water, bore north 12 west. At this time we shortened sail, and hauled offshore east northeast and northeast by east, close upon the wind. My intention was to stretch off all night as well, to avoid the danger we saw ahead, as to see if any islands lay in the offing, especially as we now begun to draw near the latitude of those discovered by Quiros, which some geographers, for what reason I know not, have thought proper to tack to this land. Having the advantage of a fine breeze of wind, and a clear moonlight night in standing off from 6 until near 9 o'clock, we deepened our water from 14 to 21 fathoms, when all at once we fell into 12, 10 and 8 fathoms. At this time I had everybody at their stations to put about, and come to an anchor. But in this, I was not so fortunate, for meeting again with deep water, I thought there could be no danger in standing on.
The ship passed just northward of Pickersgill Reef.
Before 10 o'clock we had 20 and 21 fathoms, and continued in that depth until a few minutes before 11, when we had 17, and before the man at the lead could heave another cast, the ship struck and stuck fast. Immediately upon this, we took in all our sails, hoisted out the boats and sounded round the ship, and found that we had got upon the southeast edge of a reef of coral rocks, having in some places round the ship 3 and 4 fathoms water, and in other places not quite as many feet, and about a ship's length from us on the starboard side.
The ship laying with her head to the northeast
were 8, 10, and 12 fathoms. As soon as the longboat was out we struck yards and topmast, and carried out the stream anchor on our starboard bow, got the coasting anchor and cable into the boat, and were going to carry it out in the same way. But upon my sounding the second time round the ship I found the most water astern, and therefore had this anchor carried out upon the starboard quarter, and hove upon it a very great strain, which was to no purpose, the ship being quite fast, upon which we went to work to lighten her as fast as possible, which seemed to be the only means we had left to get her off. As we went ashore about the top of high water we, not only started water, but threw overboard our guns, iron, and stone ballast, casks, hoop staves, oil jars, decayed stores, etc. Semicolon many of these last articles lay in the way at coming at heavier. All this time the ship made little or no water. At 11 a.m., being high water as we thought, we tried to heave her off without success, she not being afloat by a foot or more, notwithstanding by this time we had thrown overboard 40 or 50 tons weight. As this was not found sufficient we continued to lighten her by every method we could think of. As the tide fell the ship began to make water as much as 2 pumps could free. At noon she lay with 3 or 4 streaks heel to starboard. Latitude observed 15 degrees 45 minutes south. Tuesday, 12th. Fortunately we had little wind, fine weather, and a smooth sea, all this 24 hours, which in the P.M.M. gave us an opportunity to carry out the 2 bower anchors, one on the starboard quarter, and the other right astern, got blocks and tackles upon the cables, brought the falls in abaft and hove taut. By this time it was 5 o'clock p.m., the tide we observed now begun to rise, and the leak increased upon us, which obliged us to set the 3rd pump to work, as we should have done the 4th also, but could not make it work. At 9 the ship righted, and the leak gained upon the pumps considerably. This was an alarming, and, I may say, terrible circumstance, and threatened immediate destruction to us. However, I resolved to risk it all, and heave her off in case it was practical, and accordingly turned as many hands to the capstan and windlass as could be spared from the pumps. And about 20 minutes past 10 o'clock the ship floated, and we hove her into deep water, having at this time 3 feet 9 inches water in the hold. This done, I sent the longboat to take up the stream anchor, got the anchor, but lost the cable among the rocks. After this, turned all hands to the pumps, the leak increasing upon us. A mistake soon after happened, which for the first time caused fear to approach upon every man in the ship. The man that attended the well took the depth of water above the ceiling, he, being relieved by another who did not know in what manner the former had sounded, took the depth of water from the outside plank, the difference being 16 or 18 inches, and made it appear that the leak had gained this upon the pumps, in a short time. This mistake was no sooner cleared up than it acted upon every man like a charm. They redoubled their vigor, insomuch that before 8 o'clock in the morning they gained considerably upon the leak.
The circumstance related in this paragraph is from the Admiralty copy.
We now hove up the best bower, but found it impossible to save the small bower, so cut it away at a whole cable, got up the fore topmast and fore yard, warped the ship to the southeast, and at 11 got under sail, and stood in for the land, with a light breeze at east southeast. Some hands employed sewing oakum, wool, etc., into a lower steering sail to further the ship, others employed at the pumps, which still gained upon the leak. Fothering the ship. Wednesday, 13th. In the P. M. at light airs at east southeast, with which we keep edging in for the land. Got up the main topmast and main yard, and having got the sail ready for fothering of the ship, we put it over under the starboard fore chains, where we suspected the ship had suffered most, and soon after the leak decreased, so as to be kept clear with one pump with ease. This fortunate circumstance gave new life to everyone on board. It is much easier to conceive than to describe the satisfaction felt by everybody on this occasion. But a few minutes before, our utmost wishes were to get hold of some place upon the main, or an island, to run the ship ashore, where out of her materials we might build a vessel to carry us to the East Indies. No sooner were we made sensible that the outward application to the ship's bottom had taken effect, than the field of every man's hopes enlarged, so that we thought of nothing but ranging along shore in search of a harbor, when we could repair the damages we had sustained.
The foregoing paragraph is from the Admiralty copy. The situation was indeed sufficiently awkward. When it is considered that the coast was wholly unknown, the natives decidedly hostile, the land unproductive of any means of subsistence, and the distance to the nearest Dutch settlements, even if a passage should be found south of New Guinea, 1,500 miles, there was ample cause for apprehension if they could not save the ship. Knowing what we now know, that all off this coast is a continuous line of reefs and shoals, Cook's action in standing off might seem rash. But he knew nothing of this. There was a moon. He reduced sail to double reef topsails with a light wind, as the log tells us, and with the cumbrous hempen cables of the day, and the imperfect means of heaving up the anchor, he was desirous of saving his men unnecessary labor. Cook was puzzled that the next tide did not, after lightening the ship, take him off. But it is now known that on this coast it is only every alternate tide that rises to a full height, and as he got ashore nearly at the top of the higher of the two waters, he had to wait 24 hours until he got a similar rise. Lucky was it for them that the wind was light. Usually at this season the trade wind is strong, and raises a considerable sea, even inside the barrier. Hawksworth or Banks makes the proposition to further the ship emanate from Mr. Monkhouse. But it is scarcely to be supposed that such a perfect seaman as Cook was not familiar with this operation, and he merely says that as Mr. Monkhouse had seen it done, he confided to him the superintendence of it, as of course the captain had at such a time many other things to do than stand over the men preparing the sail. In 1886, the people of Cooktown were anxious to recover the brass guns of the Endeavour which were thrown overboard, in order to place them as a memento in their town, but they could not be found, which is not altogether surprising.
In justice to the ship's company, I must say that no men ever behaved better than they have done on this occasion. Animated by the behavior of every gentleman on board, every man seemed to have a just sense of the danger we were in, and exerted himself to the very utmost. The ledge of rocks, or shoal, we have been upon, lies in the latitude of 15 degrees 45 minutes, and about 6 or 7 leagues from the mainland. But this is not the only shoal that lay upon this part of the coast, especially to the northward, and one which we saw to the southward, the tail of which we passed over when we had the uneven soundings 2 hours before we struck. A part of this shoal is always above water, and looks to be white sand. Part of the one we were upon was dry at low water, and in that place consists of sand and stones, but everywhere else coral rocks. At 6 we anchored in 17 fathoms, about 5 or 6 leagues from the land, and 1 from the shoal. At this time the ship made about 15 inches water per hour. At 6 a.m. weighed and stood to the northwest, edging in for the land, having a gentle breeze at south-southeast. At 9 we passed close without 2 small low islands, laying in the latitude of 15 degrees 41 minutes, and about 4 leagues from the main. I have named them Hope Islands, because we were always in hopes of being able to reach these islands. At noon we were about 3 leagues from the land, and in the latitude of 15 degrees 37 minutes south. The northernmost part of the main in sight bore north 30 degrees west, and the above islands extending from south 30 degrees east to south 40 degrees east. In this situation, had 12 fathoms water and several sandbanks without us. The leak now decreaseth, but for fear it should break out again we got the sail ready fillet for foathering. The manner this is done is thus. We mix oachum and wool together, but oachum alone would do, and chop it up small, and then stick it loosely by handfuls all over the sail, and throw over it sheep dung or other filth. Horse dung for this purpose is the best. The sail thus prepared is hauled under the ship's bottom by ropes, and if the place of the leak is uncertain, it must be hauled from one part of her bottom to another until one finds the place where it takes effect. While the sail is under the ship the oachum, etc., is washed off, and part of it carried along with the water into the leak, and in part stops up the hole. Mr. Monkhouse, one of my midshipmen, was once in a merchant ship which sprung a leak, and made 48 inches water per hour, but by this means, was brought home from Virginia to London with only her proper crew. To him I gave the direction of this, who executed it very much to my satisfaction. In Endeavour River, Queensland. Thursday, 14th. P.M. Had a gentle breeze at southeast by east. Sent the master, with 2 boats as well, to sound ahead of the ship, as to look out for a harbor, where we could repair our defects, and put the ship on the proper trim, both of which she now very much wanted. At 3 saw an opening, that at the appearance of a harbor, stood off and on while the boats were examining it, who found that there was not a sufficient depth of water for the ship. By this time it was almost sunset, and seeing many shoals about us, we anchored in 4 fathoms about 2 miles from the shore, the mainland extending from north 1 to east to south by east 1 to east. At 8 o'clock the pinnace, in which was one of the mates, returned on board, and reported that they had found a good harbor, Cook Harbor, Endeavour River, about 2 leagues to leeward. In consequence of this information we, at 6 a.m., weighed and run down to it, first sending 2 boats ahead, to lay upon the shoals that lay in our way, and notwithstanding this precaution, we were once in 3 fathoms with the ship. Having passed these shoals, the boats were sent to lay in the channel leading into the harbor. By this time it begun to blow in, so much that the ship would not work, having missed stays twice. And being entangled among shoals, I was afraid of being drove to leeward before the boats could place themselves, and therefore anchored in 4 fathoms about 1 mile from the shore, and then made the signal for the boats to come on board, after which I went myself and buoyed the channel, which I found very narrow, and the harbor much smaller than I had been told, but very convenient for our purpose. At noon latitude observed 15 degrees 26 minutes south. Note. This day I restored Mr. Magra to his duty, as I did not find him guilty of the crimes laid to his charge. Friday, 15th. A fresh gale at southeast and cloudy weather, attended with showers of rain. In the night, as it blowed too fresh to break the ship loose to run into the harbor, we got down the top gallant yards, unbent the mainsail, and some of the small sails, got down the fore top gallant mast, and the jib boom and spritsail yard in, intending to lighten the ship forward as much as possible, in order to lay her ashore to come at the leak. Saturday, 16th. Strong gales at southeast, and cloudy, hazy weather, with showers of rain. At 6 o'clock in the a.m. it moderated a little, and we hove short, intending to get under sail, but was obliged to desist, and veer away again. Some people were seen ashore today. Sunday, 17th. Most part strong gales at southeast, with some heavy showers of rain in the p.m. At 6 a.m., being pretty moderate, we weighed and run into the harbor, in doing of which we run the ship ashore twice. The first time she went off without much trouble, but the second time she stuck fast. But this was of no consequence any farther than giving us a little trouble, and was no more than what I expected as we had the wind. While the ship lay fast we got down the foreyard, foretopmast, booms, etc., overboard, and made a raft of them alongside. Monday, 18th. Fresh gales and cloudy, with showers of rain. At 1 p.m. the ship floated, and we warped her into the harbor, and moored her alongside of a steep beach on the south side. Got the anchors, cables, and all the hawsers ashore. And the a.m. made a stage from the ship to the shore, erected 2 tents, one for the sick, and the other for the stores and provisions. Landed all the empty casks and part of the provisions, and sent a boat to haul the Shawn, which returned without success. Tuesday, 19th. Fresh gales at southeast and cloudy weather, with frequent showers of rain. P.M. Landed all the provisions and part of the stores. Got the sick ashore, which amounted, at this time, to 8 or 9, afflicted with different disorders, but none very dangerously ill. This afternoon I went upon one of the highest hills over the harbor, from which I had a perfect view of the inlet river, and adjacent country, which afforded but a very indifferent prospect. The low lands near the river is all overrun with mangroves, among which the salt water flows every tide, and the high land appeared to be barren and stony. A.M. got the 4 remaining guns out of the hold, and mounted them on the quarter deck. Got a spare anchor and stock ashore, and the remaining part of the stores and ballast that were in the hold, set up the forge, and set the armorer and his mate to work to make nails, etc., to repair the ship. Wednesday, 20th. Winds at southeast, a fresh breeze, fore and middle parts rainy, the latter fair. This day got out all the officers' stores, and the ground tier of water, having now nothing in the fore and main hold, but the coals and a little stone ballast. Thursday, 21st. P.M. landed the powder, got out the stone ballast, wood, etc., which brought the ship's draft of water to 8 feet 10 inches forward, and 13 feet abaft. This I thought, by trimming the coals aft, would be sufficient, as I find the tides will rise, and fall upon a perpendicular 8 feet at spring tides. But after the coals was trimmed away from over the leak we could hear the water come gushing in a little abaft the foremast about 3 feet from her keel. This determined me to clear the hold entirely. Accordingly very early in the morning we went to work to get out the coals, which was employment for all hands. Ship beached in Endeavor River. Friday, 22nd. Winds at southeast, fair weather. At 4 p.m., having got out most of the coals, cast loose the ship's moorings, and warped her a little higher up the harbor to a place I had pitched upon to lay her ashore to stop the leak. Draft of water forward 7 feet 9 inches and abaft 13 feet 6 inches. At 8, being high water, hauled her bow close ashore, but kept her stern afloat, because I was afraid of neeping her,
i.e., having her so far on shore that they could not heave her off at neap tide.
And yet it was necessary to lay the whole of her as near the ground as possible.
The town of Cooktown now stands, where the Endeavour was beached, and the as near as can be judged
exact spot is marked by a monument. At 2 a.m. the tide left her, which gave us an opportunity to examine the leak, which we found to be at her floor heads, a little before the starboard fore chains. Here the rocks had made their way through four planks, quite two, and even into the timbers, and wounded three more. The manner these planks were damaged, or cut out, as I may say, is hardly credible. Scarce a splinter was to be seen, but the whole was cut away, as if it had been done by the hands of man with a blunt-edged tool. Fortunately for us the timbers in this place were very close, otherwise it would have been impossible to have saved the ship, and even as it was it appeared very extraordinary that she made no more water than what she did. A large piece of coral rock was sticking in one hole, and several pieces of the feathering small stones, etc., had made its way in, and lodged between the timbers, which had stopped the water from forcing its way in great quantities. Part of the sheathing was gone from under the larboard bow, part of the false keel was gone, and the remainder in such a shattered condition, that we should be much better off if it was gone also. Her forefoot and some part of her main keel was also damaged, but not materially. What damage she may have received abaft we could not see, but believe not much, as the ship makes but little water, while the tide keeps below the leak forward. At 9 the carpenters went to work upon the ship, while the armorers were busy making bolts, nails, etc., Saturday, 23rd. Wind southeasterly, a fresh gale and fair weather. Carpenters employed shifting the damaged planks, as long as the tide would permit them to work. At low water p.m. we examined the ship's bottom under the starboard side, she being dry as far aft as the after part of the fore chains. We could not find that she had received any other damage on this side, but what has been mentioned. In the morning I sent three men into the country to shoot pigeons, as some of these birds had been seen flying about. In the evening they returned with about one to a dozen. One of the men saw an animal something less than a greyhound. It was of a mouse color, very slender made, and swift of foot.
Kangaroo.
A.M. I sent a boat to haul the Shawn, who returned at noon, having made three hauls and caught only three fish, and yet we see them in plenty jumping about the harbor, but can find no method of catching them. Sunday, 24th. Winds and weather as yesterday. P.M. The carpenters finished the starboard side, and at 9, heeled the ship the other way, and hauled her off about 2 feet for fear of neeping. And A.M. they went to work repairing the sheathing under the larboard bow, where we found two planks cut about half throw. Early in the morning I sent a party of men into the country under the direction of Lieutenant Gore to seek for refreshments. They returned about noon with a few palm cabbages, and a bunch or two of wild plantains. These last were much smaller than any I had ever seen, and the pulp full of small stones, otherwise they were well tasted. I saw myself this morning, a little way from the ship, one of the animals before spoke of. It was of a light mouse color, and the full size of a greyhound, and shaped in every respect like one, with a long tail, which it carried like a greyhound. In short, I should have taken it for a wild dog, but for its walking or running, in which it jumped like a hare or deer. Another of them was seen today by some of our people, who saw the first. They described them as having very small legs, and the print of the feet like that of a goat. But this I could not see myself, because the ground the one I saw was upon was too hard, and the length of the grass hindered my seeing its legs.
These kangaroos were the first seen by Europeans. The name was obtained from the natives by Mr. Banks.
Monday, 25th. At low water in the P.M. While the carpenters were busy in repairing the sheathing and plank under the larboard bow, I got people to go under the ship's bottom to examine all her larboard side, she only being dry forward, but abaft were 9 feet water. They found part of the sheathing off abreast of the mainmast about her floor heads, and a part of one plank a little damaged. There were 3 people who went down, who all agreed in the same story. The master was one, who was positive that she had received no material damage besides the loss of the sheathing. This alone will be sufficient to let the worm into her bottom, which may prove of bad consequence. However, we must run all risk, for I know of no method to remedy this, but by heaving her down, which would be a work of immense labor and time, if not impractical in our present situation. The carpenters continued hard at work under her bottom until put off by the tide in the evening, and the morning tide did not ebb out far enough to permit them to work upon her, for here we have only one tolerable low and high tide in 24 hours. A.M. A party of men were employed ashore filling water, while others were employed overhauling the rigging. Tuesday, 26th. Fair weather, a southeast wind, and a fresh gale. At low water P.M. the carpenters finished under the larboard bow, and every other place the tide would permit them to come at. Lashed some casks under the ship's bows in order to help to float her, and at high water in the night attempted to heave her off, but could not, she not being afloat partly owing to some of the casks not holding, that were lashed under her. A.M. employed getting more casks ready for the same purpose, but I am much afraid that we shall not be able to float her now the tides are taking off. Wednesday, 27th. A fresh breeze of wind at southeast and cloudy weather. P.M. lashed 38 empty butts under the ship's bottom in order to float her off, which proved ineffectual, and therefore gave over all hopes of getting her off until the next spring tides. At daylight we got a considerable weight of sundry articles from aft forward to ease the ship, the armorer at work at the forge repairing iron work, etc., carpenters caulking and stocking one of the spare anchors, seamen employed filling of water and overhauling the rigging, and I went in the pinnace up the harbor, and made several hauls with the Shawn, but caught only between 20 and 30 pounds of fish, which were given to the sick and such as were weak and ailing. Thursday, 28th. Fresh breezes and cloudy. All hands employed as yesterday. Friday, 29th. Wind and weather as yesterday, and the employment of the people the same, Lieutenant Gore having been 4 or 5 miles in the country, where he met with nothing remarkable. He saw the footsteps of men, and likewise those of 3 or 4 sorts of wild beasts, but saw neither man nor beast. Some others of our people who were out yesterday on the north side of the river met with a place, where the natives have just been, as their fires was then burning, but they saw nobody, nor have we seen one, since we have been in port. In these excursions we found some wild yams or cocos growing in the swampy grounds, and this afternoon I sent a party of men to gather some. The tops we found made good greens, and eat exceedingly well when boiled, but the roots were so bad, that few besides myself could eat them. This night Mr. Green and I observed an immersion of Jupiter's first satellite, which happened at 2 hours 58 minutes 53 seconds in A.M. The same immersion happened at Greenwich, according to calculation, on the 30th at 5 hours 17 minutes 43 seconds A.M. The difference is 14 hours 18 minutes 50 seconds, equal to 214 degrees 42 minutes 30 seconds of longitude.
This was an excellent observation. The true longitude is 214 degrees 45 minutes,
which this place is west of Greenwich, and its latitude 15 degrees 26 minutes south. A.M. I sent some hands in a boat up the river to haul the Shawn, while the rest were employed about the rigging and sundry other duties. Saturday, 30th. Moderate breezes at southeast, and clear serene weather. P.M. The boat returned from hauling the Shan, having caught as much fish as came to a pound and a half a man. A.M. I sent her again to haul the Shan, and some hands to gather greens, while others were employed about the rigging, etc., etc. I likewise sent some of the young gentlemen to take a plan of the harbor, and went myself upon the hill, which is near the south point, to take a view of the sea.
Grassy Hill.
At this time it was low water, and I saw what gave me no small uneasiness, which were a number of sandbanks and shoals laying all along the coast. The innermost lay about 3 or 4 miles from the shore, and the outermost extended off to sea as far as I could see without my glass. Some just appeared above water.
These were the innermost reefs of the Great Barrier. There is a tolerably clear passage about 8 miles wide between them and the shore, though this has some small shoals in it.
The only hopes I have of getting clear of them is to the northward, where there seems to be a passage, for as the wind blows constantly from the southeast we shall find it difficult, if not impractical, to return to the southward. July 1770. Sunday, 1st July. Gentle breezes at southeast, and cloudy weather, with some gentle showers in the morning. P.M. The people returned from hauling the Shan, having caught as much fish as came to 2 1/2 pound per man, no one on board, having more than another. The few greens we got I caused to be boiled among the piece, and makes a very good mess, which, together with the fish, is a great refreshment to the people. A.M. A party of men, one from each mess, went again a-fishing, and all the rest I gave leave to go into the country, knowing that there was no danger from the natives. Today at noon the thermometer in the shade rose to 87 degrees, which is 2 or 3 degrees higher than it hath been on any day before in this place. Monday, 2nd. Ditto weather. P.M. The fishing party caught as much fish as came to 2 pounds a man. Those that were in the country met with nothing new. Early in the A.M. I sent the master in the pinnace out of the harbor, to sound about the shoals in the offing, and to look for a channel to the northward. At this time we had a breeze of wind from the land, which continued till about 9. What makes me mention this is, that it is the first land breeze we have had, since we have been in this river. At low water lashed empty casks under the ship's bows, being in some hopes of floating her the next high water, and sent some hands a-fishing, while others were employed in refitting the ship. Tuesday, 3rd. Winds at southeast, fore and middle part gentle breeze, the remainder a fresh gale. In the evening the fishing party returned, having got as much fish as came to 2 pounds a man. At high water we attempted to heave the ship off, but did not succeed. At noon the master returned, and reported he had found a passage out to sea between the shoals, which passage lies out east northeast or east by north from the river mouth. He found these shoals to consist of coral rocks. He landed upon one, which dries at low water, where he found very large cockles, tridacna, and a variety of other shellfish, a quantity of which he brought away with him. He told me that he was 5 leagues out at sea, having at that distance 21 fathoms water, and judged himself to be without all the shoals, which I very much doubted.
Cook was right. The shoals extend 4 leagues farther.
After this he came inshore, and stood to the northward, where he met with a number of shoals laying a little distance from the shore. About 9 in the evening he landed in a bay about 3 leagues to the northward of this place, where he disturbed some of the natives, whom he supposed to be at supper. They all fled upon his approach, and left him some fresh sea eggs, and a fire ready lighted behind them, but there was neither house nor hut near. Although these shoals lay within sight of the coast, and abound very much with shellfish and other small fish, which are to be caught at low water in holes in the rocks, yet the natives never visit them, for if they did we must have seen of these large shells on shore about their fireplaces. The reason I do suppose is, that they have no boats, that they dare venture so far out at sea in.
Nevertheless the natives do get out to the islands which lie farther from the shore than these reefs, as Cook himself afterwards found.
Wednesday, 4th. Strong gales at southeast and fair weather. P.M. The fishing party returned with the usual success. At high water hove the ship afloat. A.M. Employed trimming her upon an even keel, intending to lay her ashore once more, to come at her bottom under the larboard main chains. Thursday, 5th. Strong breezes at southeast and fair weather. P.M. Warped the ship over, and at high water laid her ashore on the sandbank on the south side of the river, for I was afraid to lay her broadside to the shore where she lay before, because the ground lies upon too great a descent, and she hath already received some damage, by laying there these last nip tides, at least she still makes water. At anchor, Endeavor River. Friday, 6th. Ditto weather. At low water in the P. M. had hardly 4 feet water under the ship, yet could not repair the sheathing that was beat off, the place being all under water. One of the carpenter's crew, a man I could trust, went down and examined it, and found 3 streaks of the sheathing gone about 7 or 8 feet long, and the main plank a little rubbed. This account agrees with the report of the master and others that were under her bottom before. The carpenter, who I look upon to be well skilled in his profession, and a good judge in these matters, was of opinion that this was of little consequence, and as I found, that it would be difficult, if not impractical, for us to get under her bottom to repair it, I resolved to spend no more time about it. Accordingly at high water hove her off, and moored her alongside the beach, where the stores, etc., lay, and in the A. M.M. got everything in readiness for taking them on board, and at the same time, got on board 8 tons of water, and stowed in the ground tier in the after hold. In the morning Mr. Banks and Lieutenant Gore with 3 men, went in a small boat up the harbor, with a view to stay 2 or 3 days, to try to kill some of the animals we have seen about this place. Saturday, 7th. Fresh breezes at southeast and fair weather. Employed getting on board coals, ballast, etc., and caulking the ship, a work that could not be done while she lay aground. The armorer and his mate are still employed at the forge making and repairing sundry articles in the iron way. Sunday, 8th. Gentle breeze and southeast, and clear weather. Early I sent the master in a boat out to sea, to sound again about the shoals, because the account he had given of the channel before mentioned was to me by no means satisfactory. Likewise sent some hands to haul the Shawn, who caught near 80 pounds of fish. The rest of the people I gave leave to go into the country. Monday, 9th. In the day ditto winds, but in the night calm. P.M. Mr. Gore and Mr. Banks returned, having met with nothing remarkable. They were about 3 or 4 leagues up in the country without finding hardly any variation either in the soil or produce. In the evening the master returned, having been several leagues out at sea, and at that distance off saw shoals without him, and was of opinion there was no getting out to sea that way. In his return he touched upon one of the shoals, the same as he was upon the first time he was out. He here saw a great number of turtle, 3 of which he caught weighing 791 pounds. This occasioned my sending him out again this morning provided with proper gear for striking them, he having before nothing but a boat hook. Carpenters, smiths, and co-opers at their respective employments, and the seamen employed getting on board stones, ballast, etc. This day all hands feasted upon turtle for the first time.
As they had had nothing fresh, but a little fish for 4 months, and scarcely any meat, since they left the Society Islands, 11 months before, we can imagine that this was a feast.
Tuesday, 10th. Winds and weather as yesterday. Employed hoisting on board and stowing away the ground tier of water. P. M. Saw 7 or 8 of the natives on the south side of the river, and 2 of them came down upon the sandy point opposite the ship. But as soon as I put off in a boat in order to speak with them, they run away as fast as they could. At 11 Mr. Banks, who had gone out to sea with Mr. Molyneux, the master, returned in his own small boat, and gave but a very bad account of our turtlicatures. At the time he left them, which was about 6 o'clock, they had not got one, nor were they likely to get any, and yet the master was so obstinate, that he would not return.
This seems rather hard upon the master,
which obliged me to send Mr. Gore out in the yawl this morning, to order the boat and people in case they could not be employed there to some advantage. And four of the natives came down to the sandy point on the north side of the harbor, having along with them a small wooden canoe without riggers, in which they seemed to be employed striking fish, etc. Some were for going over in a boat to them, but this I would not suffer, but let them alone without seeming to take any notice of them. At length two of them came in the canoe so near the ship as to take some things we throw at them. After this they went away, and brought over the other two, and came again alongside, nearer than they had done before, and took such trifles as we gave them. After this they landed close to the ship, and all four went ashore, carrying their arms with them. But Tupia soon prevailed upon them to lay down their arms, and come and sit down by him, after which most of us went to them, made them again some presents, and stayed by them until dinner time, when we made them understand that we were going to eat, and asked them by signals to go with us. But this they declined, and as soon as we left them, they went away in their canoe. One of these men was something above the middle age, the other three were young, none of them were above 5'1" 2 feet high, and all their limbs proportionately small. They were woolly naked, their skins the color of wood soot, and this seemed to be their natural color. Their hair was black, lank, and cropped short, and neither woolly nor frizzled, nor did they want any of their 4 teeth, as Dampier has mentioned those did he saw on the western side of this country. Some part of their bodies had been painted with red, and one of them had his upper lip and breast painted with streaks of white, which he called carbanda. Their features were far from being disagreeable, their voices were soft and tunable, and they could easily repeat any word after us, but neither us nor Tupia could understand one word they said. Wednesday, 11th. Gentle land and sea breezes. Employed airing the bread, stowing away water, stores, etc. In the night the master and Mr. Gore returned with the long boat, and brought with them one turtle and a few shellfish. The yawl Mr. Gore left upon the shoal with 6 men, to endeavor to strike more turtle. In the morning 4 of the natives made us another short visit. 3 of them had been with us the preceding day, the other was a stranger. One of these men had a hole through the bridge,
the cartilage of the nostril,
of his nose, in which he stuck a piece of bone as thick as my finger. Seeing this we examined all their noses, and found that they had all holes for the same purpose. They had likewise holes in their ears, but no ornaments hanging to them. They had bracelets on their arms made of hair, and like hoops of small cord. They sometimes may wear a kind of fillet about their heads, for one of them had applied some part of an old shirt which I had given them to this use. Thursday, 12th. Winds and weather as yesterday, and the employment of the people the same. At 2 a.m. the yawl came on board, and brought 3 turtle and a large skeet, and as there was a probability of succeeding in this kind of fishery, I sent her out again after breakfast. About this time 5 of the natives came over and stayed with us all the forenoon. There were 7 in all, 5 men, 1 woman, and a boy. These 2 last stayed on the point of land on the other side of the river about 200 yards from us. We could very clearly see with our glasses that the woman was as naked as ever she was born. Even those parts which I always before now thought nature would have taught a woman to conceal were uncovered. Friday, 13th. Gentle breezes from the southeast in day, and calmer light airs from the land in the night. Employed taking on board water, stores, etc. At noon the yawl returned with 1 turtle and a large stingray. Saturday, 14th. Gentle breezes at southeast and hazy weather. In the P.M.M. completed our water, got on board all the bread and part of our stores. In the evening sent the turtlers out again. A.M. employed getting on board stone ballast and airing the spare sails. Mr. Gore, being in the country, shot one of the animals before spoke of. It was a small one of the sort, weighing only 28 pounds clear of the entrails. Its body was
blank in manuscript.
Long, the head, neck, and shoulders very small in proportion to the other parts.